The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve?
Uh-huh.
Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length, where we discuss all things E-Mini, along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Wednesday, 23rd day of January, 2013. The Dow is up 54 points. The S&P is flat. Comp is up 9. Gold is down $5.70. And crude down 26 cents a barrel. Chart up in front of you, in front of me, in front of us. The S&P 500 E-mini futures. This is an hourly chart. Yesterday, the market got up and got going. We were dealing with this 83-84 area yesterday morning, and we started to probe higher. We said, hey, we do have a zone up higher, and it's true. We still have one yet higher. We do. This thing ran off into the middle of nowhere, did a turn. Okay, now we drew this trend line early on yesterday. We said this is a very steep ascent. And anytime you see that, the market can only sustain that for so long. I mean, trees don't grow to the sky. I mean, eventually, this thing's going to collapse on itself. And it finally did, right here. Took out that trend line. And once it did, it started to pull back. We put a tweet out last night. It said to consider buying 1485 on a limit. We threw out a couple of other options that got you in on a stop way up here or way down here. But the first choice was just buy 1485 on a limit. And if you bought 85 on a limit, it took you back into the zone Now, those of you that are familiar with the zones, if you're a partner, you may have had concerns getting long at 85 because you knew the zone was right overhead, and that was a potential area for resistance. And sure enough, it was. Worst case is you had 2 points between the 85 and the 87, which was the weekly trading zone. But now, look what's happened since we came back to the zone. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 hours. 10 hours we've been grinding sideways here, and that candle right there certainly has to qualify for a violently sideways. But every one of these candles connected to this weekly zone at 87.88 as the market searches for some direction. You know, is it going to continue this trek onward and upward? Or is it finished? Now here, not only did we break this trend line, but that in and of itself right there is a nice little bearish candlestick pattern. These two candles right here, okay? With the close being lower than the low of this candle, tells you the start of something may be afoot. And sure enough, we got on the backside of that trend line and down we came to 85. For a bounce sideways. So, that's I'm not going to do any news at all right now because Michael has an appointment. So he's going to jump right in, do the daily recap, go over everything that happened this morning in the live trading room with the partners. And then as soon as Michael is finished, we'll go straight out to Las Vegas, Nevada, talk to Mr. David Williams from PageTrader.com and Miss Robin Dane, the trading coach. So, Michael, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dwayne.
It's all yours.
Yes, all right. Well, let me just grab these charts. And there we go. Everyone should be looking at my charts now. Excellent. All right. let me start the recording. All right. All right. Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon, everyone, I should say. Today is, Wednesday. Wednesday, January 23rd, 2013. Let me just go over the results from the morning session. We were plus 10 on crude oil and plus 15 on gold. That was our morning session. It was kind of tough trading this morning. The ES was stuck in a sideways range for, you know, a good portion of the morning session. And it did what Mike Reed calls this a prairie dog. Did a little prairie dog there, and then it took a big dive, and it came back up, and it didn't give us any trading opportunities in here at all this morning. Okay, I thought we were going to get one, but we didn't get any on the ES. Again, let me step back for a second here. If you have not taken a free trial with us, go to www.cfrn.net/apply. Sign up for our free trial. In the free trial, you get access to all the indicators that you see here. You get access to the charting platform, the indicators, the weekly trading zones. You get to sit in our live trading room for 2 hours a day for 5 business days. And in that live trading room, we'll show you everything that we do. I mean, everything I'm going to go over right here is what I did in the live trading room this morning. The trades, I try to tell them to you as they set up, before they set up. I try to let you know if you, like over here, this is natural gas. And over here, when these were setting up, I would say, if you get a down close on this current bar, that would be a spot to short. If you get a down close on this bar, that would be a spot to short. If you get a down close on this bar, spot to short. On this bar, spot to short. You know, sometimes I'll take the trades, depends what I have going on. If I have a Dom up, if I have the right Dom up for that market. I didn't have a natural gas Dom up all morning. I wish I had, because all the trades on the natural gas won. but I'll go over all that in a minute. Again, it's www.cfrn.net/apply if you have not taken the free trial with us in the past. You know, we have, it seems lately, we've got a lot of people who have taken the free trial recently who are trying to take it again. You know, if you're interested in taking it again, send us an email before you try to take it, all right? Because you won't be able to take it again. You'll get, you know, there's just some automatic stuff that denies you. And, you know, if you send us an email, we'll talk about it, right? All right. Let's move on to the trades. I'm going to start right out with crude oil. Now, I want to note, that, you know, our daily goal, you know, we talk all the time about getting 2 points a day, or the equivalent of 2 points a day. You know, when I'm in the live trading room in the morning, I have to trade for 2 hours in the live trading room. So I continue trading even beyond the 2 points a day. You know, right now we are at, in the last, today I believe is the 14th or 15th trading day so far this year. I think it's the 15th trading day so far this year. And in the live trading room, excluding commissions, we're up $2,690 a contract in the 15 trading days that we've been going. That's me trading 2 hours per day in the live trading room, taking a lot of trades on a lot of different markets and answering questions from a whole bunch of people. Now, granted, I know the stuff because, well, we created it. If you learn it, and it's pretty simple to learn, if you learn the one setup that we do in here, then you too can, you should be able to do what I've done and more. One thing worth noting, though, is that if we look to just take the 2 points a day, the 2 points equivalent a day per contract, you know, we would be up $1,500 right now instead of $2,690 because it's 15 trading days and we look for $100 a day, $100 a contract a day. Oftentimes, like yesterday, I think in the first 16 or 18 minutes, I was up the equivalent of the 2 points. And then I continued trading, and I traded, you know, quite a bit. And toward the end of the morning session yesterday, I took a yen trade that lost. And I'll point it out. I took a yen trade at the end of the morning session yesterday that lost, and it took away $100 out of the profits that I had made in the morning session. So that one trade, not sure what's going on. That one trade ended up messing up my morning's totals a little bit. But if you guys were looking for just the 2 point equivalent, you would have been done by then. Okay. Now, let's just go over the crude oil trades. Okay. You can see I took a few of them in here this morning. The very first trade, I put it on here and I took profit up here. If you let that trade run, that's your 2 point equivalent right there. You could have done that in 15 minutes. You could have been done with your trading. All right, but what we were looking for here on the crude was the bullish cross. You know what? I'm going to remove this CFRN and insert another one. Indicators. CFCFRN. There you go. All right, because the lines were kind of thin. If I bring up my picture, I'll show you. Pretty much textbook stuff in here. You look for the bullish cross, the pull away from the BBC. We didn't get any pull away in here until up here. Okay, then a pull back down test of the BBC with an up close. So right here is the spot where you would have gotten long on this up close. I had missed, this was right at the open. All right, so you could have gotten long right in there, right at the open. I got long over here on this one. On this one, because we had a little red on the cycle right here, we needed to close above the trend line. This was the trend line I had drawn down from the tops, so I got long on the up close off the trend line, above the trend line. All right, took some profit there. I got long again up here on the up close above the trend line, took some profit again. I got long again up here on the up close above the trend line and took some more profit. I missed this one up here, okay, and I took this one over here. So there in the first hour, in a market that really, if I'd have just gotten long here and stayed long, that would have been a nice trade. If I'd have just gotten short here, I took most of the move out of that trade right there. So I was pretty happy with that. Now in the first hour, there's at least a 2 point equivalent potential right in there. Okay. Now as the day went on, I didn't take any more trades on crude oil, but you can see there were more opportunities right in here. This was pretty much textbook. You get your bullish cross, your pull away, your comeback, test the BBC, bullish divergence. This is a dragonfly doji right here. That wasn't up close. If you got long right in there, you stayed in it. You know, because this was only a 6-tick drawdown. The thing, you know, it kept going up after that. There was another opportunity to get long right over here. The same exact thing, dragonfly doji, for a little bit of profit in there. And that brings us to where we are right now. We don't have any divergence over here, so there's no trading right here. On the short side, there wasn't really anything in there. You lost the divergence by the time the trade actually set up. That was the crude oil this morning, okay? We ended with plus 10 ticks on the crude, okay? Now, the next market I'm going to bring over is the Russell. We didn't take any trades on the Russell, so I'm going to be pretty quick about it. The Russell, the only opportunity that was there in the Russell was this little bit of divergence down here. It pulled back up to test the BBC here, but it didn't make it. Then it closed down below the trend line right there. You could have shorted that, looking for the thing to get down into the cycle, all right? There wasn't much room for it to move. I wasn't interested in trading it. I didn't trade any of the indexes this morning, okay, because the ES was so sideways that I let all the stock indexes go. All right, I didn't trade any stock indexes this morning. All right, let's see over here. This was the gold. Now, I took a couple of trades on gold this morning, right there, those two trades, three trades. There was one trade on gold that we just missed getting into, and I'll show it to you in just a minute. Here, this was the open. Gold was pretty choppy right here at the open, and then it dropped down here. We finally had some bearish divergence right in here, all right? Again, the BBC, if we bring this thing over, you look for your bearish cross up here, you pull away. Your pullback up toward the BBC, this time it didn't hit the BBC, so you didn't get your step three. But what you did get was a close down below this trend line to continue the trend. All right, we had the bearish divergence right down here. So we took that trade, we got short in there, we took some profit down here. There was an opportunity to get long right here. If you look at the picture again, on the opposite side, right here, bullish cross, pull away right in there. Tested the BBC with an up close with bullish divergence. Okay, and up it went. All right. Over here, same thing. You know, it didn't pull all the way back up to the BBC, but it closed down below the trend line, an opportunity to get short. Right in here, it pulled back up and tested the BBC and gave a down close, but there was blue on the cycle, so you want to wait for the confirmation below the trend line. It was right in there. I tried to get into that one. It just missed me before it made this huge drop. Right here, this one right here. I tried to get into it, but it took off on me. I did get into this one over here, and we took some profit on this. I also got into this one over here, and I ended up taking a break even on this one. Okay, those were the gold trades this morning. Well, if we go all the way through, there was another shorting opportunity in here. And let's see, we needed to pull away, test the BBC, and give an up close right in here. We were at the close of the morning session. You could have been looking to get long right in here on a close above the trend line. Okay. No, that's not doing it. Anyway, same thing right in here. Right now you have bullish divergence. Let's see, the trend line right now would be like this. That's your trend line right now. You have bullish divergence. If it tests the BBC, you can just take an up close. If it doesn't test the BBC, you need to close above that trend line. That is gold on the morning. Okay. We ended plus 15 ticks on gold. Let's see in here. We have the NQ. Now, with the ES being stuck right inside the weekly trading zone, we were not trading any of the stock indexes at all. I just outlined all the trades on the NQ as they happened. Now, I know some of the partners took the trades this morning, but I don't. It's just against my rules. All right, but this was, again, textbook, bullish cross, pull away, step back. I mean, pull back with an up close and a bullish divergence. Right in here was a spot to get long. All right, on this one, because it was red on the cycle, you needed to close above the trend line. On this one, because it didn't hit the BBC, you needed to close above the trend line. On this one, you really didn't have any divergence, so you would have had to withstand this drawdown before it moved back up, but you could have done that. Okay. Then it flipped around and it started going down. So there was an opportunity to short right here. Okay. And again over here and again over here. Change directions again. You see how you get your bullish cross right here? Change directions again. Opportunity to get long in there. Right here toward the end of the morning session, there was an opportunity to get long, and this one would have stopped you out if you would have tried to take that long right there. Okay, it would have stopped you out. All the other ones would have been winning trades. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 winning trades before you had your first losing trade. And then it looks like you would have had 2 in a row right here. but you can see how choppy it is right here, and it's all chop right now. There's nothing to trade right there on the NQ at the moment. Okay. But if you had, again, if you had a 2-point goal per contract with those 8 winning trades, you definitely would have reached that goal. Okay. The ES, as I said, there's nothing there on the ES. Okay. The soybeans, there was a ton of movement on the soybeans, but we missed all of it. I just hadn't looked at the soybeans. I did look at it over here on the open, and I said an up close on this bar would be a spot to get long, and I didn't actually do it. I said it, and then I moved the chart away, and you can see that that would have worked out very well. It would have been 1450.75, and it ran up to, let's just say, 1457.75. So it went 7 cents, the equivalent of 7 points on the ES. When it turned around and started moving down, there were opportunities to short it in each one of these spots right here. Each one of these spots, there are opportunities to short. so, that is that. That was the soybeans this morning, okay? I didn't take a single trade on soybeans. I don't even have a YM chart up, so I can't look at that. But what I will look at, a little bit on the yen, we only had one opportunity this morning. I missed that. Or I didn't take it because we didn't have much room over here. Okay? It changed directions, eventually changed directions, but again, we didn't have any real good divergence to take the trade. The spot would have been right here, okay? The trend line's right here, like that. The spot would have been right there, but we didn't have any real good divergence. Now, let me jump onto the natural gas over here. All right, that's actually moving again right now. Some of the guys in the live trading room pointed out the natural gas. I think it was Andrew. Pointed out the natural gas this morning. He said it's really moving. And actually, we looked at the euro this morning. That was moving pretty well, too. In here, you would have taken the up close on this above the trend line, up close here above the trend line, up close here above the trend line, and the up close here above the trend line. All right. Then it changed directions. The down close here, the down close here, the down close here, and the down close here. Changed directions again. Right here, the black line's below the green line, so you wouldn't have been trading right in there, but you could have traded right in here, okay, and again, right here, I believe, right in there, okay, so that's it. I didn't take any trades on natural gas because I didn't have a natural gas DOM up either. All right, the only places we took trades this morning were crude oil and gold, and we ended plus 25 ticks or $250 a contract on about 5 or 6 trades this morning. All right. That's it. Not a bad day. And that makes it our 27th consecutive day. Consecutive trading day. Now, that puts us up $2,690 so far on the month of January. Okay, just on the per contract in the live trading room. Alright, with that, I'm going to have to stop the recording here. If I see any questions come in, I'll answer them as quickly as I can, but I got to stop the recording because I believe I'm going to have a visitor here in about 6 minutes. All right, the recording is done. And if anybody has any questions, just type them in here right now, okay, and I'll be happy to answer.
All righty, thanks, Mike. And Mike Reed had sent me an email that he was going to pop in. Has he popped in yet?
Great. Let's see. I'm checking. I don't see him yet. Hang on, let me do this. Hang on, let me look in the other bin over here. Nope, he's not in yet. Mike Reed is not in yet. But hopefully he'll get in here before I leave.
Okie doke. All right, so guys, that's it. If Mike pops in, we'll bring him in. Robin is back, I believe. She had to run an errand, but I think she's back now. David, Terry, if you've got audio issues, I guess it must be on your end, because as far as I know, everybody else.
I'll type that in, because he can't hear it.
I typed it in already. He never
responded. Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah. So.
Okay. All right. And you are now.
We did have a tweet this week on the yen as well. I showed you the S&P. On the yen here, we had a tweet to be long above 11,230, and that Bank of Japan news came out. We actually had this, the tweet came out back Sunday night, I think it was, but it finally triggered yesterday, and nice little run up on the yen, because the yen had been in a downtrend here for a number of days. In fact, let's look at it real quick on a daily. Yeah, there's the yen on a daily. I mean, that thing's been tanking for a while. It's a technical term for a while. Now, it's got, you know, 4 days here putting in this little bottom. I guess you call that a quadruple bottom. I don't know. Leveled out at this 11,100. It's starting to turn. And so they're doing some aggressive business with quantitative easing. What's interesting is that as opposed to quantitative easing is something that should, you know, it's like an emergency measure, you know, put out the fire kind of a thing. But I don't know, the Japanese are very ceremonious people. They say, okay, we're going to put out the fire in 2014. What? That's true. True story. They're not going to start their QE program for another year. They're going to wait. So, and they didn't say they were going to wait to see if things got better or if things changed. They simply said, we're going to do it, and this is the date it's going to start. So I don't really know what the reason was behind the wait, but they chose to wait. Okay, did Mike Reed pop in? If not, we're going to go ahead and go on out to Vegas.
I am looking right now. Let's see. No. Not there, anyway. Nope, I don't see him in there.
Okay. All right, if you'll open up Robin's mic for her, if she's back from her errand. Guys, we're going to pause for a short station identification. We'll be right back with Mr. David Williams from PageTrader.com. So don't go away. Don't touch that radio dial.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Good morning, Dwayne.
Hey, good morning, Dave. We snuck up on you early today.
Oh, you did sneak up on me early. This used to be the normal time.
It was, and then we keep getting later and later, and now we...
It's hard.
And good morning, everybody.
Good
it's a
morning,
great
Robin.
Day here in Las Vegas.
Yes, good morning, Robin, and Mike Reed. Mike Reed's in there now,
I hear Mike Reed now. Yeah, we were hanging out waiting for you, and then I didn't know if you were coming, and so we went on, and but there you are. Mike?
Mike. There he
Mike.
Was.
We know you're there. You gotta talk to us.
I hear him.
Yeah, he's probably still working on his Mike's situation.
Mike Reed, are you there?
Oh, hi, Dwayne.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, Mike.
How are you?
Hey, Michael.
Hey, Michael.
Hi, David. Hi, Robin. Well, hello, everyone. Hey,
we brought the whole gang out to see you today.
I just had to reinstall GoToWebinar when I must have been my browser. But anyways, I'm on here.
Yep, you're in.
You're here?
How you doing, Dwayne?
Good, man. The GoToWebinar, they always want like the absolute positively latest version of Java. And there's been some issues with Java of late. In fact, people were told to uninstall Java from your computer. Don't even use it because of some virus that was about. But for us, we have to. We can't run our platform without Java, so
yeah.
It wasn't really an option.
I think that was it. I think Java was uninstalled, so maybe that was it. But in any case, how are things?
Good, man. How about you in this violently... Now, today, if this right here, if this is not violently sideways, I don't know what is. For one,
like
two, three,
yeah.
Four, five, six, seven, eight, 9, 10 hours, and then this huge spike right here. Where we go, you know, in the hour, we go from a low of 84.50 to a high of, I don't know, 89.50. So we got a
89.50, I believe.
5-point range. Only to end up, you know, right back where we started.
Yeah.
Rolling sideways.
Yeah. A bit of a stair step higher here. Also, it's got to hold around that. Really has to hold 86.5. To keep that going. So.
Now, this thing really got moving yesterday afternoon. Were you there watching that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was a trend up day, and if you look at the pullbacks starting off of the low, we had support right at 75.75 to 75.25. So we actually nailed the support down there. Each pullback was 1.50, 1.5 points to 2 points,
mm-hmm.
All the way up. So, and they're all well contained and no kind of scare to them. And then back up again. So really it was an easy day to trade if you're just paying attention to the direction, the momentum, and I think we had either 6 or 7 pullbacks that were all the same distance, and so everything fit really well yesterday. The late run, I thought.
What sort of a time frame are you seeing those pullbacks in, Mike? Because on hourly,
if you look at a 5-minute chart, you can see them on a 5-minute.
Right.
Yeah.
I just have a steady march higher of green candles on this hour.
Yeah.
Let me jump over here to a 5-minute.
Yeah.
SH3. I always find that interesting how you measure your pullback. I mean, you're talking about each pullback was 1.5 points. Is that something that you set and measure, or does it just, after time, it just kind of pops out at you?
I noticed that they're equal distant. After the first two, I started, and, you know, they made a turn up off of the low. So that was a positive. And then the first two pullbacks were tiny.
Now, this low, you're talking about this low right here, right?
Yeah. Okay, so up to 14. Let's see. The first move up was to 14, 79 high, and then a pullback to 77.5.
Yeah.
So that's 1.5 points.
Hang right there for 1 second, Michael. Do you remember yesterday in the live trading room when I said, "Here's a chance for us to pop up out of this weekly zone"?
I do remember.
All right,
that.
I happen to be looking at a 5-minute chart, which is right here. I don't always have a 5-minute chart running, but I had it, and I saw this doji, and after this, and then this doji here. And that was my. Now Mike had it. Mike Reed had it as a support number. I just saw those two little dojis form there in context, and I thought we would pop out of that zone. I had no idea it was going to lead to what it led to.
But you can see the distance there. The first.
Right there.
No, you go back one.
Oh,
go
right
back
here.
Right there. From there down to that's 1.5 points.
Gotcha.
And then the next move up off of 80, up to 80, down to 78.5.
Right.
Another 1.5 points. They rallied up to 83.75.
Right.
Pull back to 82.
Okay.
Yeah, so 1.75 points. Mm-hmm. Made it up to 84.5.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a pullback to 83.
Mm-hmm.
And then a little bump up again to test that high at 80. Let's see.
Now let me ask
84
you
and
here,
a quarter,
Mike.
And then another small pullback, and then.
Mike, right here, on this pullback where you didn't make a higher high, would this have you starting to question whether or not this rally or advance might be over?
Yeah, it did. Started, it had me thinking that maybe that it was running out of steam, but the pullback from there down to another was just another, and they barely took that out. It's like a prairie dog on the downside, and came right back up again. So that just like switch flipped back to.
You're talking about this one little tick right here, right?
Mm-hmm.
That one, guys, when he's talking, Mike talks about a prairie dog. It's that one little tick right there. Sticks its head out. Normally you think of a prairie dog sticking his head
out. There's the prairie dog.
Yep, there he goes.
There's a dog.
Did he hear us say dog? Is that what it is?
Look at them take care of. Anyway.
That's funny. Sound effects and all. The sound of a prairie dog.
Yeah. I tell you, the one was actually singing like a. I don't know.
Hey,
it was a howl like it's never heard of. It's like a wild wolf.
Is it true you can see the city of
Chicago? It was funny. I tried to get it on camera.
Mike, is it true you can see the city of Chicago across the water?
Pardon me?
Can you see the city of Chicago across the water?
Can I see the city of Chicago across the water?
Yeah, I know you got a pond. I saw a picture.
Oh,
the other
from
day.
Where I'm at. Okay.
Yeah.
No.
There is some place in Indiana where you can look across the water and see the city. Yes? No?
And I'm not sure exactly.
You know, the city of Chicago?
Right,
Illinois?
You can look out from Chicago and see the lake, yes.
Yeah, but I thought, I saw a picture the other day. Somebody, it appeared they were standing on Indiana soil in front of a big body of water, and they were looking across the lake and seeing the city of Chicago on the horizon. Was that a picture somebody photoshopped or something, or is that actually something?
So they're out in. They're out. I'm having a little trouble hearing. So they're out in the water, out of waves, and looking from the lake onto the city of Chicago.
They were standing on the shore somewhere, looking across a huge lake, and on the other side of the lake was Chicago.
Oh, no, I don't know about that.
All right. Let's go back to the chart.
Okay.
All right. So you got this move higher, another pullback here. Now, this one's more than 1.5, right?
Right. I think that's 2 points. That was probably the biggest pullback to that point of the day by one tick. And then the next bounce after that was about the same deal. So it continued. That looks like, 1.75 points? So yeah, between 1 and 1.5 to 2 points all the way up, and there was really no reason to step in front of that, unless you're doing a scalp of some sort, but But that was, I don't know, a pretty strong indication of the trend up. The only, like he's pointed out at that one spot was, you know, it may make a turn, but it turned right back up again after that little prairie dog, so didn't have to, just back to the upside again.
Mm-hmm. Now, but, when the advance halted. Now, interestingly enough, guys, there's the end of the advance right there, correct?
Yeah.
Is that the high yesterday? 91? Yeah. This thing, on a 5-minute chart, guys, this thing ended with a doji. And it began with a doji. Now, does every reversal have a doji? No. But at major reversals, you'll quite often find a doji. And were there dojis along the way? There were a lot of them. Here and here and here and here. A doji is not always a reversal signal. Sometimes it's based on context. It can simply be a continuation signal. And of course, it's easy to pick them out after the fact. But here, on this one coming down, you'll notice that this tail dropped below. And then you always watch what happens in the next candle. And so by the time you have this one closing up here, even if you didn't catch this bottom here, this is a pretty good indication on this close that this market is going to attempt to trade higher. And then if we roll over here to where the thing finally ended, again, you know, as Mike said, stepping in front of this is not something you would probably want to do. So you might not have taken this as an indication to short the market, but it might have got you to thinking about maybe it's time to take profits. And so now we've got, of course, the market's closed, and then we begin this quiet, you know, sideways trade into the Asian Open. And it just traded lower and lower and lower until it got down to that entry that we had on the tweet at 85. Got down to 84.5. And that's it. And that brings us up to where we are today.
Yeah. And oftentimes after a trend day, you get two-sided action or consolidation, especially pretty hefty move like yesterday. So, unless this was going to continue, its little melt-up mania that we were looking for, the two-point pullbacks would have to hold. And when they didn't, after right off the bat, that kind of broke the pattern. And so, instead of trending, we're going to go into two-sided trading day. So
what's your outlook for today?
Back and forth, two-sided, probably. Spend a lot of this time inside of our early range. So, if they do get, there's, just above 90, we have 91.5 to 92.5 for a pretty strong resistance. And then just right around 1500. But I thought today, tomorrow would be, time for a rest. And maybe it would be into next week, and then we could get end of month strength that takes us up to new highs. And at that point, I think there's no fear at all in the market. So it's so complacent, but that would be a red flag if we get even more folks jumping in up here at the highs and gets a little bit more stretch. It's pretty stretched price-wise, I'm sure.
Yeah, some
of people have overbought indicators. Ours aren't. Mine aren't to that point yet, but I think that if everything does light up and we're at the right price, and then we see action that gives us reason for this to make a turn, then I think, you know, we barely have had a pullback all the way up, and so we'll get one of those at some point, and probably not too much further up from here. I guess that's
now, you were tuned in. You were tuned in last week when Garrett was on with us. What were your thoughts on
that? Yeah, I was. Garrett Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He brought back a lot of old time stuff that actually I built some of my indicators off of. You mentioned Terry Landry and Peter Eliades, both of whom my broker would send me their newsletters. He would get their newsletters and then send them to me, and I would find something that would be of interest in one of them or both of them, and put stuff into spreadsheets and tinker around with some indicators and stuff, and ended up building my own. But those two had some good ideas. And Peter Eliades, I don't know, he's still going at it today, as far as I know. I'm not sure if Terry Landry is still.
No, somebody mentioned last week that he passed away.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, his was the magic tea theory,
right.
and he was an engineer, and that's, I think, what, an electrical engineer or something of that effect. I think that's how he got his stuff, or his teas or whatever, and, yeah, I can remember him getting that stuff back in 87 before the crash.
Garrett put out a special report today, the most dangerous time in the past 80 years. Now, he's really been getting kind of worked up here over these last few weeks, that he really thinks this is weird, that we're at, you know, not just a top or a temporary top, but, and David has also commented that he thinks that we're near a point where we're going to see a multi-year decline. Isn't that correct, David?
That is correct.
Yeah.
That is correct. I believe that first we need to go up, like we've talked so many times, first we need to go up and get into the 1500s, which we think is likely, and then that's the warning sign for a multi-year reversal. That's correct. The beginning step for it.
Well, multi-year highs, and no one's, seems like, everybody's bearish. I can hear on the TV or...
Yeah, we're not bearish now. We're bearish.
I mean, not bearish,
only.
I'm sorry. I mean, everyone's bullish, my bad.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah, I think so. And by what I hear on television anyway, I mean, 9 out of 10 people on CNBC are bulls.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's funny because you know how, and we've all read the books about how when sentiment is very strong in one direction, that the pros, you know, quote unquote, go against that because the sentiment is usually wrong. But it's not always wrong, because you can go in and take a look at very, very big movements that have taken place over a number of years, and the sentiment can be very bullish for a number of years, actually. If you go look at the history of the market, I know you have, Michael, and everyone else, and quite often the sentiment can be very strong for quite some number of months or years, and for that whole time the market indeed continues to move up. So you want to be careful with the idea, just the general thing about, hey, you know, if everybody's bullish, that means the market's going to come down. It doesn't always mean that, and in our view, we're getting close to that point where everybody will be bullish and the market will then come down. But we've been talking for the last whole year about the market, and recently in the months particularly, going up and having to test 1500 or higher. And then we think that bullishness that's going to get, it's going to get frothy up there, and then there's going to be a much larger decline. So that's just our opinion. That's what we think is going to happen. You know, if we're not right about it, you know, maybe we'll sell magazines or something, you know. But I don't know. You know, that's what we think is going to happen.
Getting a bit frothy already.
It is. Michael, you sound particularly good to me today. I mean, not just the voice quality, but you seem like you're, you sound well. You sound really, you know, like.
Yeah, I'm feeling better than I had over the past
couple of days.
Week or so.
Oh, well, great. Because you sound particularly, you sound very crisp and clear and,
He always sounds good to me.
You do have fans, don't you, Mike?
I guess. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Anyway, so that thing that goes to that we were just talking about, just to finish up that subject, I do like the idea of looking for the frothiness, looking for, you know, everyone's all in and all that stuff, but then the market happens to be at some critical level that would normally, and it begins to find resistance at that level and whatnot. I do like taking advantage of that, but you do have to be careful, and you can't just take it as an absolute that because everybody's frothy, it means it's going to turn right now. I'm saying this really more to the audience because there are multiple year advances that go on. Take a look at the one that started in, you know, 09 or whatever this one was here. We've had, you know, a really good run all the way back from the March of 09 bottom, and there's, you know, there's all kinds of people that were very bullish inside this, running the thing up. You just have to be careful with that. I think shorter term, it's also very good to look for frothiness. And by frothiness, we mean, you know, the spikes in volume, the spikes in intensity, and so on, that can all be noticed at a very important juncture where the market's going to turn, as an example. So I think we're getting to that point here with the market continuing to break out and continuing to want to test these higher prices. What we think, you know, has to be completed is the 1500 level. We're not, you know, we've gotten up to almost 92. We've come within 9 points, 8 points of that so far. So I think it's likely we're going to see more of that. Do you have a longer-term outlook, Mike, yourself, or are you?
I think that up here that risk far outweighs the reward on the long side. Mm-hmm. And actually surprised that we can get to 1500, but I have to say that surprised to see that level. But mm-hmm. I think this is turning into a mini mania that doesn't end well. So I, you know, I know the VIX has been low for a while after being up around 22, maybe 3 weeks ago. It really has nosedived. Mm-hmm. And it's still bullish at the moment. If you look at the futures contracts, you look at the back months, they're still trading higher than the nearby months, but that's pretty close to turning, and it's even being poo-pooed in the media, but it's, in my work, if it goes down a little bit, it still has further to go because it's not stretched far enough away from, it's not stretched far enough away from the mean. But yeah, if it does move farther and then make a turn, I mean, that could coincide with higher prices and then make a turn also. Would all set up really nicely, I think. But
you know, somebody on the program just a few minutes ago mentioned Peter Elides. Was that you or was that Dwayne?
It was Dwayne. I mentioned him.
Mike brought him up.
Was on last week.
Because it's interesting because he used to run many, many, many years ago, and really maybe like 20 years ago. I think he ran a 1-900 number that you could call. Mm-hmm. That was at that time, those were the things that people were using.
Yeah.
You know, you would dial in and you would get their service and you would pay through your phone bill for these services. And that was the last I had heard of him, and that's the first I've heard of him in a long time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people age over time. I mean, 20 years has passed, practically.
Yeah.
So I don't know what his age was when he was doing that. And if, you know, some of these people that are, you know, he was pretty well known in cycles, circles, things like that. Yeah.
He's probably has 10 or 12 years on us, I bet. But mm-hmm. I saw him on the TV, and he looked good, and still has that like curly afro type hair.
Mm-hmm. Well, that happens when you stare at the market for too long. Anybody that has been in the markets knows about the curly afro hair thing.
He used tracing paper for his cycles. That is what he did, and he would trace out a certain. I don't remember exactly the way he did it, but I remember to experiment with some of his cycle stuff was to go buy some tracing paper and trace out moves, and then he would displace them forward so many units and run cycles somewhat. He'd have different ones coming in together and all that stuff.
But should there be a mental institution for technical analysis? I'm just wondering, there should just be a building where the people do these things, you know, they buy tracing paper, they move the cycle out. The one guy in another room believes that, you know, if you take the planets and you do this with them,
Archie.
Shouldn't we have a place for all of us to go? You know, just the camaraderie of all having the same illness.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. Hey, good morning, Mike. How are you doing? Yeah, hey, the sun's 3 degrees into Jupiter. I'm looking for a big move. Great, Dave. You know, on the way to the breakfast area, you know.
Yeah.
I wonder sometimes about us technical analysis people.
Yeah.
You know.
I know.
You know.
I've been in that institution myself.
Yeah, I've been in that institution, believe me. I'm still on medication to this day, actually. Anyway, and Robin, how are you today?
It's I feel really good. I'm not terribly jet lagged. I feel okay. It was freezing in New York. I couldn't wait to get back.
Oh, had to be.
One degree. Yeah. I was like, at least they threw us a degree.
That's what we have.
Yeah. Oh, terrible.
Sub-zero wind chill, so.
Yep.
Lovely.
And little snow flakes here and there, but then they got hit and Michael got hit, I think, last couple days up in Massachusetts. I think he got hit with some snow, if I'm not mistaken. And my girlfriend's telling me she got hit and she was staying home and she's going to work from the house. What a great thing computers are. Now they can get them to work from the house when the snow is there.
Mm-hmm.
Before you just didn't go in.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I had to step away, so it was nice chatting with you.
Nice to chat with you, Mike. I'm glad you're feeling
better. Nice to hear you, Mike.
Good training to all you guys out there. And,
Mike, have a great day, man.
Thanks for having me, Dwayne.
I'll see you in the ping pong room at the mental
at the club
later for the Traders Institution. Let's call it
Traders Country Club.
Yeah, the Traders.
Well, I'll have my white jacket on.
Good. You'll look like a doctor, but you're really a patient. That's good. I like that.
Okay. All right, guys.
See you soon.
Thanks
Mike.
Again, Dwayne. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Mike. Bye-bye. Take care, man. Have a great day.
See you guys.
All right.
Goodbye.
All right. See you.
Okay, David. What's going on with you today?
Well, I'll tell you what. First of all, it really is. It's not that she's, you know, she does say it every day. We're talking about Robin, but it really is a beautiful day here in Las Vegas. It's a
it
little
really
bit overcast.
Is.
It's a little bit overcast, but it's very nice, and we're still in the middle of winter, and we still have temperatures that get down into the 40s and sometimes, for sure, into the low 30s. But it's a beautiful time of year, and when we have our, in March, when we have our seminar over here at the Mirage, it's going to be a whole lot nicer than it is now. So, you know, I don't want people to worry too much about coming out to Las Vegas and worrying about the cold weather, because I know there's cold weather everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But in March and mid-March, I think it's going to be very nice, very pleasant out here. It won't be summertime, obviously, but it's going to be probably a lot better than it is now. So we passed that equinox or first quarter.
Yeah, we had that one week was pretty tough, but now mm-hmm. it seems pretty good. Yeah, I'm very happy and I was very excited. I sat next to a guy who is from the radio on ESPN, and he does Monday, Wednesday, Friday on channel 720 AM, and he may have me on as a coach on the ESPN channel.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Wow,
which
that
was
nice.
That was pretty cool.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Nice guy, really nice guy. And We sat there sharing airborne tablets and pills, so nope, we were not going to get sick on the plane. I managed to ward off the flu the entire time with my ASAP and my airborne. I was around so many people that were sick, and I did not get sick. My immune system is just kicking butt. I'm so excited.
Oh, well, that's good. And, you know, I actually know two people that really had a bad run of the flu out here.
Really?
It looked like the normal flu, but you could tell they were, you know, yeah. It was miserable. And, you know, some people, I don't know, for me personally, for whatever reason, I don't get the seasonal and the, you know, monthly or seasonal colds or whatever, and that just has never been something that I've been that susceptible to. I have other things that can happen to me, but colds I'm not, and flus I'm not. I did get a little bout of food poisoning, though, the other day, which I think I mentioned on the radio about a week or so ago, week and a half ago. And so for as much as I eat out, and I know, Dwayne, you eat in a lot, but I suppose that can happen. And the last time I had it before that was about 8 years ago, so it's not too bad. We do have a lot of nice restaurants out here in Las Vegas, and most of them, you know, have an A rating. But if you go into a restaurant and you see like a C rating, it's probably not a good idea. You know what I'm talking about? The little thing where they rate. It's probably not a good idea to eat at that restaurant. I'm just saying.
Yeah, you really. It's funny. My girlfriend got sick too, going to a seafood restaurant, which I was so surprised because it's not typically bad. And there's just a lot of stuff going around. You know, people handling food, and you know that and all that. You just have to be careful when you've got that flu thing going around. That's all. You have to just be careful. Be smart.
I can tell you a really gross story just before we go to the markets.
Oh, go ahead.
I was eating at a sushi restaurant, and normally when they serve it on a plate, they have the green, what's it called, the wasabi, which is the hot stuff. And then they also have a little, like a little pile of ginger.
Ginger, there. Right.
Mm-hmm. And
that's
so
like pink.
I was eating. It was like pink, exactly. And I was eating that, and I reached down to take the next piece. I was just about to put it into my mouth, and it looked normal. But when I looked down with my eye, I realized that what I had in my hand was a Band-Aid.
Oh, no.
Slipped off of somebody's finger.
No,
while they're making the food, yes.
No.
And it was pink. The Band-Aid was kind of like, you know, that tan color.
No.
It was so
very bad.
I went to the manager, and I said, you know, I found a Band-Aid in the, you know, in the ginger. And I said, is that extra? Do I pay more? I don't know how much, you know. And they offered me a discount. I mean, this was the really disgusting thing they offered. See, if I was an owner of a restaurant and somebody found a Band-Aid that slipped off their finger, I would say to the person, you don't pay for this meal or the next three.
Absolutely.
That's how upset I am about seeing that. I'm so sorry.
Oh,
but instead,
absolutely.
They said, we'll give you 15% manager's discount.
No. That's. Don't tell me this is your favorite place.
No, it's not my favorite place.
I was going to say, because they would never do that to you.
No.
Okay.
They would.
That makes me feel better. Because.
But I'm sure everyone
terrible.
In the audience has their own story that they could tell, and maybe somebody can text it in. Just a short, sweet version of the truly disgusting things that can happen. And listen, the guy who had that Band-Aid on his finger, he obviously did not know that it had slipped off. He's working with wet substances, and he had a cut on his hand, probably from work, and it slipped right off into the ginger. It went right under. You know, he put a stack on there, and it slipped right under there. And, you know, stuff like that happens. You just have to keep your eyes open because that kind of thing can happen, you know, even with professional chefs and whatnot. So kind of gross, isn't it?
Yeah.
I know it's a little early for that.
Yeah.
Hey, Williams, can you save the gross stuff till afternoon?
I have some other good news.
Go ahead.
I am now a Las Vegas Police Department volunteer. I made that on Friday. And what was so bizarre about this whole thing, when I joined Red Rock Search and Rescue, my personal favorite number is 22. And it just shows up everywhere in my life. And I always know that something's going on when that comes up a lot. And so when I sat in the room of 125 people and they were handing out call signs within Red Rock Search and Rescue, guess where Robin gets? Red Rock 22. So I said, oh, I'm supposed to be here. Mm-hmm. I go to the Las Vegas thing and get my call sign for the Las Vegas Metro on last Saturday, and I get 7227. Not only did I have 22, but I had it surrounded by lucky sevens.
You know what? I just want to say something about that. Then we'll get to the markets. Many years ago, I'm not sure if that's really a thing or not. I know you've seen 22 in your life, but
everywhere.
But here's the funny thing. You may not realize how much you're looking for that number because something happened to me many, many years ago. I had ordered, I mean, this is a long time ago, and I don't want to go into the details, but I had ordered a car that had a certain number to it. The car's name was a number, okay? And it was from a German manufacturer. And while that car was on, it was a specialty deal, specialty car. It wasn't something that you would find at a dealer. And so while the whole process of getting it over from there to here, and there was paperwork and all kinds of stuff that you had to do, everywhere I looked, I always saw that number, the actual number of that car, everywhere I would look. And that's, to me, I kept saying to myself, well, that's proof that I should, you know, that I'm doing the right thing. You know, kind of similar to what you just said.
Yeah.
You know, we have these little suspicions and superstitions or whatnot. And so, but I realized that I have seen that number a thousand other times, but after that all went down and, you know, the whole thing was over, I think we tend to start looking for that number. You may be seeing 22 a lot, but I'm not so sure that there's not a bunch of other numbers that repeat in your life as well. So I'm just saying, I don't need to wreck your fun number 22 or anything.
Well,
but it did happen to me as well.
I'll give you one more thing. I mean, I also won my big win at the casino based on a bunch of twos. And when I came out of the hotel, because I had a business meeting on Monday, and when I came out of the hotel for this business meeting, which was very, very important, there was a car sitting there parked, not the one that was picking me up, but a different one, and it had R22 on it. So I don't care what you say.
There you are. You
it's
win.
It's all the way around.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere. Everywhere.
They're coming
so
for you.
I'm very, you know, that's how I can tell. My mom's sending me some messages, and she's got me on the path, and she got me going in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how she signals me.
I know. Remember Houdini, the famous magician?
I loved Houdini.
He was a spiritual he was a guy that was debunking spiritualists because there was a period of time in our history back in the 1915 to 1935 or whenever it was, somewhere around there when Houdini was actually big. And he these people would, you know, contact the other side and let you sit in a room, and they would have proof through things floating through the air, and these seances would go on. And this was a big thing, very similar in many ways to what goes on now, where there are indeed people who say, you know, they'll have a pad and a pen in front of them, and they'll be scratching the pad and saying, oh, he's walking into the room now, and he's saying this to you and that. And this can be, listen, on one very serious level, it can be very comforting for people to have this, you know, quote-unquote communication. Most of it is a bunch of nonsense. Because these guys are doing this is a living, this is what they do, and so on.
Yeah.
But it's just funny that Houdini, later in his life, he got so upset with these mediums and spiritualists and so on that he eventually dedicated the last part of his life to debunking them, to proving them wrong. And then, before he died, he told his wife and other people that he was going to make every effort he could, if you know, once he was dead, that he was going to try to contact them in a number of different ways that they had pre-set up so that, you know, he could either ring a bell or he could leave a this or do a that, whatever it was. And he really wanted to, you know, see if he could make it happen. And, of course, nothing did happen. And that doesn't mean that there isn't anything bigger and different out there when we're talking about death and the beyond and all that. But when you said, you know, your mom's communicating with you, it reminded me of Harry Houdini, because that was a really big thing. And it still is to this day, and I think it will always be. There will always be people who will you can come to, and that for a fee they will contact and go into a state of some kind and contact the other side. See, if I was a medium, I would have an ad in a paper, but I would say, listen, you don't need to go to these people who are going to contact the other side. I'm already on
the other side. You know, pay here my credit card, and then I'll contact your people there for you. All right.
I got to tell you, I did go to see John Edwards to see him work, mm-hmm. and I've never in my life saw anything like it. There was no way that he got anything from anybody. I talked to a woman next to me who told me about her story. She was from Oregon, drove all the way down. She had never met him, and he picked up information about her, and she had told me it ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So,
John Edwards is a cold reader, and it's a whole art. It's called cold reading. And if you listen very carefully to what they're saying, and again, I hope I'm not offending anybody, and I don't want to discount the possibility there is communication with the other side and so on. But when somebody is doing this for a living, which is what he's doing, there's a whole art of called cold reading. It actually falls under the category of magician. And what they're doing is you'll notice that they'll say something like something to do with the color purple and the name that starts with the letter P. And they're mm-hmm. throwing these ideas out there. Now, if the ghosts and spiritual people from the other side are speaking to them, they're not saying things like purple, or letter P. They're going to tell him what the subject is, and they're going to nail it. But instead, they always start out by throwing out a number of different things for people to hook into. And then people go, oh, purple. My brother-in-law, who was killed in a horrible motorcycle accident, his motorcycle was purple. I can't believe you knew that. And then he'll cold read into that. Well, okay, yeah, I'm communicating with him now, and I see that he liked, and then he'll just take a shot. I see something with fishes. I see an aquarium. Oh, my God, he had an aquarium in his bedroom. Well, a lot of people have aquariums in their bedroom, you know, and on. And some of them, if they don't work, if the person says, no, I don't see anything with that, they just move right on to the next thing. And after a while, they take a number of hits, and on a good show, they get a whole bunch of real positive hits like that, and people leave amazed. And listen, in the end, if it helps you and you feel better afterwards, isn't that what you're paying for?
Exactly. I mean, I saw people really just get totally relieved. I mean, it was amazing you're right, the impact of them just getting some kind of feeling like they had some kind of closure or something,
right.
You know.
Right.
It really did emotionally, you know, get them in a good place. And you're right. I mean, it's not for everybody. I'm not a, you know, diehard believer. I'm fascinated more than anything else, you know, to see. I like to keep my mind open to any kind of possibility and just check it out and then make my own decision. But I never get obsessed with anything because that just nothing
I'm not
in excess is
either.
Healthy.
I'm not
nothing
discounting.
In, yeah, so I don't want to. Yeah,
I'm
I mean,
saying
you know,
that there are people that is beliefs. That is an act. A cold reading is a magician's act.
Yeah, and then you know, I mean, you know, Dwayne certainly could back me up on this. You know, had the power of belief. You know, mm-hmm. belief is just so strong. You know, the beliefs that you bring to your trading desk are very, very powerful in many, many ways. And so, you know, belief is a powerful factor that we can use in our favor or against us. And I choose to use it in my favor. And that's how I, you know, go through life.
Right. One thing I would say about that, and then I promise we'll get to the markets.
Okay.
Is that I have found that most of what people actually believe mm-hmm. they are unconscious of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Most of what you actually believe you're not conscious of. And you need to work to become conscious of it. And most of what you say you believe, you're simply trying to convince yourself you really don't believe. The actual beliefs you have, the actual beliefs you have, you're almost certainly unconscious of them.
Uh-huh.
So think about that. That may be a provocative statement to you, but I have found in my own work of watching my own mind and doing all the things we talked about on the program, that I've discovered that I actually believe things that I had no idea I believed. And yet if you asked me, well, do you believe this or believe that? It's, oh, no, I don't believe that. I believe this. But actually, I believe something completely different, and I'm unaware of what I actually believe. And so, again, it goes back to that same thing. We're living life through the camera, but we never see the camera, the person looking through the camera.
Yeah.
We always see what's on the other side of the camera, and that show has almost nothing to do with the reality of the person looking through the camera. It's a completely
different
thing.
Yeah, that's a great perspective. That's a good perspective.
So, something for people to think about when it comes
absolutely.
To beliefs. So therefore, beliefs are very powerful because they do run your life. And on top of that, the ones that really are running your life are mostly unconscious. That doesn't mean they're hidden from you. That means you're not aware of them. There is a difference. They're not hiding.
Right.
They're just not seen by you. So the only thing you need to do to become more aware of unconscious belief is to simply become more aware of what's going through your mind.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Yeah.
It doesn't require special pills or, you know, whatever, or a seance or a cold reading.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I, you know, again, you know, it's such a touchy subject, and, you know, whatever works for you is the right thing. Whatever you feel comfortable with works for you, that's the right thing. I never judge anybody based on, you know, what their belief structure is or, you know,
I do.
I don't.
I do judge people, and I'm willing to admit that I judge people on a thousand different levels at a thousand times a second. But I will say this, that there's nothing wrong with judging people. It's an automatic response that your mind does. It's not even something that you have to necessarily initiate. It's part of being human, that your mind is constantly crunching the numbers, looking at people, sizing them up, judging them, and so on. It's nothing to be ashamed of. What people should be ashamed of is telling people or convincing people that they're not judging them when in fact they are, in order to get there. Normally when somebody comes to you and says, listen, I'm not judging you, they're doing that to get something from you. They're setting you up to get some information out of you, to relax you, to keep you calm. That's usually what's going on when somebody says something. Listen, you know, we need this from you. I'm not judging you. I'm not da-da-da. That's the kind of thing that people say when they want a piece of information out of you that they will then judge, you know, use to even judge you further. But judgment is a natural thing that occurs. And if people are honest, really honest with themselves, you'll see that you're judging constantly people all the time.
Well, I'm not gonna dispute your attack on that, but I learned when I did my coaching in the prison system, that I found that I was able to not judge people. That I went in there, no matter what they did, no matter what they were incarcerated for, that did not affect my ability to work with them or not work with them.
Oh, absolutely.
That everybody was exactly the same. Now, is that a form of judgment? I would look at what they did. I would think about what they did. I would decide, could I have done that? No or yes. But I would never deter any kind of help that I gave them
based
on what they had done. And
that,
to me, is judgment. That's how I'm defining
judgment.
The
feeling, the good feeling that you get that you're talking about when you're not judging is that the judgment does occur. The judgment occurs, but you consciously override the judgment and put it aside and listen to them with both ears and try to not allow your actual judgment, which did actually occur, to play into. And it feels good to overcome your own judgment about people, because how many times have you been right and how many times have you been wrong? And I guarantee you, your judgments have been wrong 10,000 times more than they've ever been right. They may appear to be right at first, but as you get to go into the subject deeper, you find out more and more that your judgments were wrong. You know, we all do it. Everybody does it, and everybody finds out that they were wrong.
But I tell you, you know, I an interesting thing happened when I first started coaching there. I had 18 women, and at first I had asked for their profiles to find out what they were in for, and through a series of just timing, I never got them. And I never found out what they were in for until I did the one-on-one coaching with them, and I would do that over a 13-week period, one by one. Uh-huh. And I found that not knowing why they were in for allowed me to disconnect the judgmental kind of thing you would be prone towards in teaching them. And, you know, I mean, I had three people that had committed murder. It was a federal state prison in New Hampshire. And, you know, I don't know if I could have dealt with them directly knowing what their profile was ahead of time. So I got to know them before I coached them. And I was amazed. I said, I'm really glad that I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think I would have made a different decision or talked to them differently or ignored them or been frightened of them or whatever. And I didn't. And that was the power of that workshop. And we had such tremendous successes that I was, you know, really, really proud of that. But it was from, I said, no, I've learned to put aside judgment.
Right. That is possible. It is possible to do that.
Of that crime. And that's not an easy thing to do, I'll tell you.
No, but it does feel good. It does feel good, though, to put it aside and to really look.
Sure.
Yes, there is. To put, look at somebody, try it in your own life, the judgment occurs, and consciously put it aside and listen to them with both ears, and the next judgment comes, put it aside. And it leaves you free to interact with that person, because that judgment that comes up actually is a wall between you and that other person.
Yeah.
Even
if
you're acting loving and kind, it's actually a wall that's there.
I mean, I even talk to you even though you have a vault.
Oh, is there something wrong with my vault?
No, I love your vault.
I know. I've never taken you for a ride in that.
I know.
You're going to have to come for a ride in that, and then you'll know what I know.
Okay.
You'll be one of the
I think specials. We should get to the markets. We're probably driving everybody crazy
now. We just go on and on. Okay, I don't know what to tell you about the market anymore with regard to the S&P. I'm telling you the same thing I've said for quite a while here, and just that simply is we're in a very powerful uptrend. We don't expect it to end until we get up into the 1500s. When we do get up there, we and beyond, even, you know, we may see even as high as the mid-15s. But the general idea is that this isn't a forecast as much as it is partially a preference and our overall outlook. I do want to mention, if I can toot my horn a little bit, and I won't even tune it, but I'll put that aside. Let's just put it this way. We think the trend isn't going to end until the 1500s are reached and played around in for a while, and I think, like we talked about with Mike Reed, the frothiness will pick up at that point, and the intensity and the fact that there will be all kinds of news. Hey, the market's near, you know, it's only this much from its all-time high. And you'll be seeing that on the news. There'll be stuff in print, you know, markets love, you know, Obama's, whatever, or whatever it is. That's the kind of thing. And one of the things, I just want to mention this, one of the things that I thought that Robert Prechter, the guy from Elliott Wave International, who I respect, in spite of a number of public calls that didn't work out, one of the things that I've said on the program many times about him is that he really, really does, I mean, sincerely, he absolutely really does hold the candle, hold the torch for R.N. Elliott. He really picked that up, the guy that developed the Elliott Wave Theory, and Robert really immersed himself in that in a profound way, in a profound way, and his whole organization is based off that. But one of the things that he has done, which I think is good, is he has shown in a very clear way how the newspaper and the media shows the frothiness with all of these things right before often big turns will occur. Other people may have known that information, but he was one of the first that really came out with really showing how here's a series of magazine covers, here's a series of newspaper articles that all came out clustered around this big thing that happened, like the market becoming, you know, getting near the highs. And I'm telling you that, you know, if we do get up there into the 1500s, we're of course going to see the kind of news that shows that, and that gets people frothy, and it gets a lot of vibration in the market, a lot of intensity, and that would be a big warning signal for all of us to know that a much larger turn is imminent. So our belief is that we think the S&P is going to continue higher. We've been talking about it for months into the 1500s and with the usual declines and whatnot. We're not even getting the usual declines right now. We're just getting nothing except a slow grind up. Go ahead.
Yeah, there is a overall money's coming out from the sidelines going into stocks again, out of bonds into stocks. I mean, I'm hearing that everywhere.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, I'm still a little bit hesitant. But I would like to look at my favorite soda right now.
Okay. Is that, because that's on a different chart, is that SODA? Is that actually the
symbol? Yes, please.
That is SODA.
Well, there you are.
And they had some news, which was they just announced the six beverage marketeers, Anheuser-Busch, Coca-Cola, Kraft Foods, Milk Processor Education Program, PepsiCo, and SodaStream. The ads are costing $3.7 million to $3.8 million for each 30-second commercial. They have to be doing good to do that, to compete with the – I mean, they're taking a direct attack on the big guys.
Mm-hmm.
They really are. So I'm glad that I
That's
let
funny.
You know
I don't know anybody
this.
That has that product. Dwayne, have you used that product, or have you?
Have I used what product?
Robin?
The
nope.
Soda Stream?
I don't do soda, so.
No, I
wouldn't do
not,
the Coke or Pepsi either, so
that.
I don't do soda, so.
Never mind.
Well, yeah.
But, you know, it's that whole other range of the kids and the...
Sure, sure.
You know, I mean, it's just a whole... I mean, look at the chart. Look at that
mm-hmm.
chart.
It's beautiful.
It's a very pretty chart to me.
Yeah. I would just... The only thing I would add to this is I might expect to see a top made in this market in the month of February or at the latest March, but February would be the on-time month.
Mm-hmm.
And they still have plenty of room they can do on the upside before then.
Yeah.
So we'll talk. We'll keep an eye on this. Let's just remind each other to talk about this a little bit from time to time.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I like about it, again, I think you're right on the top, and I think it's going to happen right after the Super Bowl. I think there's going to be mm-hmm. this big push, you know, after that hit, and then I think there'll be some profit taken at that point.
Mm-hmm.
For sure, because this has just been going straight up.
Yeah. Okay,
well,
so
not straight up, but
not straight up, but
know.
It's done pretty good.
Yeah,
it's yeah. ever since you've mentioned the stock, it
See?
Has been very strong. Yeah. So okay, so well, that's basically all I have on the S&P. We have a very, very narrow range today in the S&P. This again is for those of you who might have graduated from, you know, the practice on a simulator. These kinds of markets, this very quiet kind of quiet market movement, is not a bad place to practice trading. Yesterday, the market got up to, yesterday in our support and resistance panel, we had 92 as the next important level on the upside. They did almost reach that yesterday, and they did test it today. Any further test of that level, you know, I'm not really a fan of even trading the market necessarily today. It's so quiet, and you could be in it for hours to make 2 points. But if they do test any of the critical levels, like this morning, they got down to the 85 level. We tried to buy that. We did. We're looking, you know, to just maybe trade some of the extremes, but we're using the term extreme very carefully because obviously it's a 5-point range or something on the market today, 6 points range. So it's very, very small. So not a whole lot to add to that. Unless, Dwayne, unless you have anything you'd like to throw in on there.
On soda?
Soda or on anything else?
Well, on the S&P, we've gotten back above this weekly zone. Now, the 5-year high
mm-hmm.
here, guys.
At, it's big.
14.91.50. Now, keep in mind, the all-time highs are 15.50. So we're
mm-hmm.
60 points away from the all-time forever high in the S&P 500.
It's going to be interesting on the timing when they do, if they can never get the fiscal cliff thing done. You know, it'll be interesting on the timing on that.
Mm-hmm.
Because that
mm-hmm.
thing is still hovering out there, you know. And,
yeah.
You know, these guys can't get it together. I kind of like that they don't get paid if they don't get the budget done.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like that scenario. They don't get paid. It only takes them 5 years.
Are you looking at the cash market or the futures market for your all-time high there?
The all-time high in the S&P 500 is 1550.
Is that cash or futures, though?
Cash.
Oh, cash. Okay. Because we're, yeah, mostly we talk about futures, but you're referring to the cash here.
Yeah, I'm talking about the thing that the majority of the world looks at and refers to.
Yeah.
And when you hear it on the news or on the radio, they're not quoting the futures price. So it's accepted that the all-time low or the all-time high is 1550 and that the crash low was 666.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Is that not correct?
Well, it doesn't show that on my chart, but it's, you know, there may be some, I may be looking at it, or maybe you're looking at it wrong. I don't know which one, but I'm showing a cash value of 1576.09 made.
Well,
in,
I mean, that's, yeah, I'm not splitting hairs. 1550 is the, you know, an area. 1550.
Oh, okay.
You know.
Okay. I thought you were naming the exact number, and I was thinking, that number didn't sound familiar to me.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, let's see here. Let's move on then. Let's take a look at a couple of other quick markets here. Okay, so you know we're looking and we're keeping an eye. We're keeping an eye on the gold market. The last reversal that occurred on the gold market was on the January 17th, which was a reflected wave daily top one day early. And the market has spent 4 days sideways here. We're really interested in watching this market into the close of January. I don't know how many days left we have in January, but not too many, do we? Because today is January 23rd. And so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 trading days more. How the market handles itself between here and the end of this month is important for us because, as we've talked about on the program so many times, that level that has been important to us, maybe 16, 78, maybe up to 16, 80, 82, right in that range, maybe a 4-point range. If they close above that, we're very excited about potentially the implications of that for gold. And we've talked about it on the show, and I've said it before, that we think one of the more important bottoms for the year would, with given that, may be forming right here. So keep that in mind.
It was October 9th, 2007. It hit 1565. That was the current all-time high for the S&P 500.
I'm sorry, say that again. There was some noise on the thing
October
they're doing.
October the 9th of 2007, the current all-time high was put in for the S&P at 1565. That's according to CNBC. So
okay.
That's the figure they're working off of.
Yeah, okay.
So
fair
that's
enough.
Why I rounded it at 1550. But yeah, the actual number, 1565.
Huh. I'm still, for some reason, I don't know why I don't show that, but I'll check it out a little bit later. And the only reason it responded to it is because I didn't, when you mentioned 1550, I didn't remember that number itself, and I didn't realize you were speaking of it in very, very general terms there. Okay, so we'll move on from the gold. So we're interested to see that. I have nothing, really, the gold's been pretty quiet here as well, and we'll continue in watching that over the next several days. The U.S. Treasury bond market, we continue to be bullish off of the December 31st weekly bottom that we had talked about back on the week of December 31st. And so we're looking for a multi-week advance. I wouldn't be surprised to see this market continue higher up into the 147 level. We are trading today at 146, maybe 147 and some change. But in general, we're bullish. Even if we go sideways here a little bit, we think the bottom that they just put in is going to continue in the U.S. Treasury bond market. That means interest rates stay low, and that means whatever goodness comes from that. Just remember this, that your credit card, we all have credit cards, and the interest rate that they charge on the credit card, of course, is founded in the basic overall interest rate. So when the break really does happen in the bond market and later and the interest rates do start to pick up, that means credit card interest will start to go higher as well, and it means everything that's related to that interest rate will start to go up. So, again, look around and try to take advantage of low interest rates because it affects practically everything that we end up touching one way or the other. Okay, so multi-week advance underway in the bond market. The euro, we've had some questions about this. The euro is at a, we believe, a critical spot right now, and we may end up putting out a roadmap. We talked about this yesterday, today, on this. They haven't done much today. They've gone sideways here, but this isn't a real big thing, but it will be tradable. So for those of you who have an interest, you can come over to pagetrader.com and check it out and maybe trade the next one of these and see if it's useful to you in picking up some points directionally, you know, in directional movement here in the euro. And this is the March euro that we're talking about. And then, let's see, we've talked so many times about crude oil. What I'm looking for this week in crude oil is for this week to close at or below last week's high. I'm sorry?
Are you in March?
We are in March in crude now. Right. I think February expired, and maybe somebody can correct us. I'm not 100%.
What's with that microphone? Is that
Yeah, is that you?
Oh, maybe that's me. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah.
Is too much noise? I got to... I'll, sorry.
Can I replicate it for you so you can see what it sounds like? Do you want to hear it?
No, I'm sorry. I'll turn it
off. I'm just playing with you.
I'm sorry.
No. It sounded like maybe somebody had dropped a mic or something.
I switched those microphones because that other one wasn't working, and this is like overly sensitive, I think.
Well, but yeah. it's not so sensitive for your voice. Your voice sounds great. It just occasionally, it's like it bumps against something. But no, you sound fine. You sound perfect.
Okay. I was just gonna make fun of you and make my own microphone sounds, but okay. All right. You sound really good. Your voice sounds great, so don't worry about it. Okay, so let's see. What was I saying? We're talking about crude, and what we're looking for this week is for crude. What we're expecting is for crude to close at or below last week's high. And so Dwayne just identified that March is the contract. I don't believe February is even trading anymore, although I'm not 100% sure. But we're in March, and last week's high is $96.04. We're trading right now at $96.05. So we're expecting that whatever they do on the upside, the normal thing for them to do this week would be to close at or below last week's high. We're only two more trading days away from that because we have a shortened week. If that happens, then we will have bigger news next week regarding the next step in our roadmap. So this week we've gone up. We've tested some important levels up at 96, 90, and higher. You know, we've gotten close to 97. Honestly, I like what I've seen them do. I like the fact that they scared some people. If you call Bert Schlichter from Daniel's Trading and say, did anybody call up really scared about what crude's doing, he'll say yes. And that's the kind of thing we want to see. We want to see the market kind of get people all wired up. You know, whoa, they're running to the moon. They're going to all-time new highs or whatever, you know, whatever it is. Somebody did ask a question on the radio program yesterday, Dwayne. I don't remember the fellow's name. But he asked a question which was provocative, which is that, do you see crude getting up to $140? Well, $140 is, you know, hell and gone from where we are right now. Anybody ever seen Romancing the Stone, that movie?
I did many years ago.
You know you love that movie, right?
I love that movie.
I can't
you
remember.
Love that. Somebody loves that movie.
I love that movie.
Something in a Jungle, right?
Yeah, Something
yeah,
in a Jungle.
The
woman is
heart.
A writer. She's a storybook writer, and she's going...
The Cortisone. Heart.
And
the heart. The big emerald
she's
heart.
She's going to Cartagena.
Cartagena,
and Michael Douglas is he's hunting the jewels, you know, he's trying to find his wealth, and they meet up on a broken down bus on the way to supposedly Cartagena, and she says, well, doesn't this bus go to Cartagena? And he says, honey, you're hell and gone from Cartagena. Just a little movie trivia there. So 140 is hell and gone from where we are right now. We're at 95, 97. And I am still working on that. When somebody asks a question that stretches the market that far, it makes me think, well, maybe there's something here that I need to look at because there's a lot of smart people out there. And there may be something cooking on this. I'm still working on it. So I'm just letting you know that I don't have an answer to the question. I don't have anything that says we're going to 140 right now. But I'm still looking at that to see if there's something that I could generate from that question because that is so far out of where we are. And yet those kinds of moves are possible. Those kinds of moves are possible and they will happen. They have happened and they will happen again. And this is, again, why we all have to trade with stops and use protection to make sure that you're not caught in that one move, which if you keep trading with the idea that the market always comes back to break even, you're absolutely forced by just mathematics to be stuck in the move that actually does run to 140. And then you keep holding and the market keeps running and it becomes very personal between you and the market at that point. And, you know, this really is not good for you to do. And the way you get out of that is by protecting your position and saying, this is where it would make me wrong. So one of the things we're looking for with regard to what would make us wrong is if they really close anything more than, you know, 20 cents or something above last week's high. I mean, some rough number. That's kind of rough. But I'm expecting this week to close at or below last week's high. We'll talk about crude as we get into Friday. because we think there's big things coming in crude. So that's basically everything that I have. We had talked about the market getting up to the 96.25 and 96.30 area. They've done that, and so now they're starting to reverse. And this is exactly the kind of movement we want to see with regard to crude. We want to start seeing some spikes to new levels. It scares people. Hey, you know, what's this all about? And then before you know it, they're starting to really move, and the move is on. So if you want to see what we think is going to happen in crude, you can sign up, take a free trial of Messenger Pro, or sign up for a month and check it out. We have the whole list of roadmaps that are underway there. And then I'm just going to mention this real briefly, that Tesla, the electric car company, is up nicely today. This is TSLA if you're into trading stocks. And I like stocks. We've done very well with stocks. If you were at our webinar yesterday, you saw our latest trading statement. This is about an 18-month statement where we only utilized options. And so we recently made a new high. We had sold puts in Intel. I don't have the symbol for Intel right now. It might be INTL, but I'm not sure. But we had sold. I'm sorry? You got it?
Let me try and bring it up. I think it is, Dave.
Yeah. This is the latest setup that we have. INTC. Thank you.
Thank you, Bert.
First looked at from Daniel's Trading. Over. That was my 5 second spiel.
Yeah.
Hey Bert, is it true that trading is not easy, but it can be simplified? Is that true?
That was putting him on the spot.
Inside
joke. Beautiful.
It's a little. It can be simplified, but you're right, Dwayne. It's,
let's just unleash the power of DT Pro. There you go.
Okay. All right.
Whatever you want to do. I'm good.
All right.
Thanks for the Intel symbol. David, it gapped down. Now, they had earnings yesterday. No, wait.
I see.
They must have had earnings a couple days ago. Why are we looking at Intel?
Only because I had mentioned it just with regard to we had been in a position on the put side, meaning that we had sold puts down when they had gotten down to the $19 or $20 range, and we had a nice rally up here, and they got up to $22, and the whole thing went from November 21st to around January 17th. We didn't get the whole move, but we had a nice trade utilizing options, sort of trading the trend. By the way, the trend isn't necessarily done. What the pullback that has happened to what you just mentioned with the the earnings season and all that coming out, that hasn't ended the trend, but they did break down nicely here. Anyway, that bumped our statement up, this last one, and we showed it yesterday. So we're real happy with that, and, we're on the radio. We're all friends here. We'll mention it. We're at $194,000 in an actual statement that we've booked in about 18 months, selling option premium in literally 100 different kinds of stocks. Not 100, but a lot of different ones. And all we're doing is finding reflected wave tops and bottoms on either weekly, daily, monthly types of highs and lows, and then selling premium against those. And by doing that, it means that we're going to be in for a number of either weeks or months, and that allows option premium to decay. So it's not as satisfying, like how day trading is. You buy something now and you sell it a few minutes later, or 15 minutes later, or 20 minutes later, or an hour, and you've made some money, and that's very satisfying, and it has its own place in the world of trading. The option thing is almost exactly opposite of that. You don't get any kind of immediate satisfaction from putting these trades on. What happens is in 9 times out of 10, is at the very instant, and Bert, you confirm this, the very instant you sell option premium and then you go on the screen and look, it's already against you. The market hasn't even moved. The moment they sell it to you, it's already against you. So that's just the way it goes, and then you have to wait for a period of time for the market to begin firming up and changing its direction, or continuing in the direction it was going. And even then, you don't get a lot of movement from the option. It takes time and it takes market movement to really, you might only get paid 2 or 3 points total for the option, for you having sold it. But there are benefits to being an option seller, and this is what we've been doing for the last 18 months. We showed that statement when it was down at $10,000. It's now up at $194,000, so we're $6,000 away from $200,000, and it has nothing to do with anything except selling option premium. So there is some value there. We're going to continue to show that. We've been showing that statement for over a year or more, whatever it's been, and we're going to continue to do so and see how much we can run that thing up and really, you know, hit it good. But we're not going to come into the office with the idea that we need to sell option premium. We're just going to look around until we see something that looks really easy. And because there's so many different stocks out there, there's thousands of them, you know, you just look around and you just stay casual and wait till you see something that looks really compelling. And then you might even wait a little more, and then you put your option premium on and you're good to go. And can you be wrong? Yes, you definitely can be wrong, and you have to manage the position, of course, just like anything else. But anyway, so I'm just mentioning. So Intel, this last little run-up
that
we had was part of...
So there was a question here, David, from Jerry.
Please.
How much money do you need in an account to be able to sell naked options to generate that type of a return?
There's two things. I'd like to answer that question in two ways. First, in my normal voice, and then in sort of a silly, high-pitched whine.
Okay.
That's actually from...
we know.
What's the show that's from?
Money Python.
Okay. And I've done it so many times, it's almost like a bad Get Smart joke. There's two things. First of all, Bert Schlichter is on with us. He is the one that's licensed to talk about margin, but I do want to say a couple things about it. Number one, not all of the selling that we're doing is naked. Naked means doesn't mean you take your clothes off and begin trading. What naked means is that you don't own the stock, because you can sell options against stocks you don't own. You might say, well, I think Intel is making a bottom. I don't own Intel, but I'm just going to sell some options here, and so on. Or, on the other hand, you could own Intel and say it's making a bottom and say, I'm going to, not only do I own it, but I'm also going to sell option premium. Or maybe Intel is making a top and you own it and you say, in order to protect myself from Intel going down, because I think it's gonna, I don't want to take the whole position off. I'd rather just sell options, which helps pay off some of that decline. So that's what a lot of people call covered call writing, covered put writing. Covered meaning you own the underlying asset. And the reason they call it covered is because it's not naked. You actually own the stock, and therefore you're in some people's minds a much better position than somebody who's just writing, you know, selling premium. Now, as to margin, if you own the stock, it's different than it is if you don't own it. And Bert, if you want to address that, if you're naked, you know, naked is the most expensive kind, so you need margin. Bert Schlichter from Daniel's Trading. Are you there?
Bert,
see, Bert's not there,
there
when we need him.
On another Jerry,
option,
this is a different
okay.
Jerry.
It's a couple $1,000 probably, or maybe less. It depends on the stock, honestly, and it depends on the price level the stock is trading at. If it's a very high-priced stock, they're going to price the margin higher. So it's best to ask your broker that. It's a great question, and in order to do this, you do need to have some money in the account merely for margin purposes. You're not giving the money. You're not putting it into the trade like buying stock. It's just sitting there. So you do need a little more option. You know, you need money in the trading account in order to provide. And by the way, and then I'll let you go, Dwayne, here. I just want to say the reason margin is important is because what you're saying with that margin is that you have the capability of paying the other guy if you're wrong. That's the whole purpose of margin, is you have to be able to say, yeah, I believe the market's going to do this, but if it doesn't, that other guy needs to be guaranteed, and the broker is making sure you have the minimum required margin so that if you're wrong, they can immediately transfer the money to the guy who was right. And that's what margin is all about. Go ahead, Dwayne.
I just wanted to say that a different Jerry had said that you can also sell spreads to minimize margin.
That is correct. And there's a whole very complex program called SPAN, which is at brokerage, which they take if you sell a call and sell a put. They will reduce the margin dramatically in many cases because you can't get hit on both sides simultaneously. So in other words, you have sold a put and you sold a call. Well, the market can only kill you or hurt you, on one side. Mm-hmm. So they reduce the margin requirement dramatically. But you have to remember that also means that you have to manage both sides of that trade. You're essentially saying the market should remain inside of a range for a period of time. And if the indexes are inside of a range. If you're looking at the Dow and the YM and the cash market that we were talking about earlier with Dwayne and the S&P futures market, and if all of those markets tend to look like we're in a big trading range, that might be a good time for you to consider selling spreads, because then you get paid on both sides. You're basically collecting premium on the long side and the short side, and you have to manage that position. But that you're basically potentially doubling the amount that you would make on a trade like that. So Intel was the last one that we did. That's where we got to this. This is the one that bumped us up from 188 to 194. So there was a $5,000 or $6,000 gain on these options, and that's all we're doing. We're just looking for little, you know, chunks here and there out of the market. Sometimes we don't get anything, but over time it does add up. And I really like the idea of the listeners considering, with the help of a broker like Bert from Daniel's Trading, putting together something as a backdrop to your other trading, so that you have something going on every day, and that means, you know, in the background you can say, hey, I've got some option positions on, they're working for me. So you don't quite feel that same urge to, you know, necessarily go into a wrong set of thinking with regard to making yourself trade when maybe there isn't a trade in a market. There's plenty of trades, but you know how we do that. We sometimes get into that mindset, well, you know what, I got to do something here today. I got to make a couple hundred bucks or whatever. That's not, you know, that's not how you want to be thinking. You want to be looking at this and finding the stuff that really sets up right for you. So anyway, did you have anything else, Dwayne, you wanted to throw in on that or on any of this
subject?
There was subject?
Another comment here. Let's see. RG asks, if I sell a naked put, does it normally go to the last day before being put the stock?
No. What he's talking about is expiration. And it's easy to confuse expiration with being put, because if the market put it this way, you're going to be in a position at some point where you're wrong. And yes, most of the time it does go to expiration, and that's when they, you know, when the option expires, if the stock has gone through. This is a little complicated. If the stock has moved through you, then you can be put the stock at that time. Maybe a better way for me to say it is that you're not going to want to be in that position if you're talking about naked. If it goes through you and if it gets through your strike price or it's done whatever it shouldn't do, you want to be out of that. So 99 times out of 100, you're not going to be put the stock, meaning that you're not going to have to own it. You can just get out of your option. But after expiration or coming into expiration, that's a whole different story. And Bert can address that. He has probably a clearer way to express that. And one last thing I want to say about expiration, because expiration is when the option expires. What that means to most option people is they want to hold on to, if they're sellers, they want to hold on to that option all the way to expiration. We don't try to do that. We sometimes are able to do that. That means you get all the premium that they paid you. But the goal of saying I'm going to hold all my options to expiration, that may not match what the market is doing. And don't let that nice expectation that I'm going to get all, I get to hold it to expiration, because I can't tell you how many people, how many graveyards filled with traders there are who trade in options, who all they were really trying to do is, no matter what the market was doing, they're just holding on for dear life for expiration. Don't make expiration the purpose of the trade. The purpose of the trade is to get in at a bottom, ride it up to some reasonable level, and to book profits. And if it continues to move and you have a smaller part of your position on at that point, maybe you can hold for getting closer to expiration. At some point, the risk and the reward becomes completely skewed. You're going to make 3 extra cents if you stay in an extra 3 days. That doesn't make sense to do that. Just get out of it and don't make expiration into a junior high school level achievement thing where everything has to run to expiration. That was a mistake that I made for many, many years. And it suddenly dawned on me that it just, the risk-reward ratio does not work for you after a while. Forget expiration. Just get it out of your head. Trade the trade. And when the thing has made its move, take your options off and go to another stock and find another thing to do. That's what we've done for 18 months. And we have taken losses along the way. And when you come to we have a webinar tomorrow. If you want to come to it, we'll show you that statement, and we will show you the losing trades as well as the winning trades along the way. And what we try to do, you can see, we're trying to contain the losses to a reasonable amount of money so that we don't end up you know, emotionally upset, and we don't end up trying to, that therefore causes us to do something silly. It's better to not, you know, I've said this a million times, it's better to not trigger the Achilles heel than it is to trigger it. So just don't trigger your Achilles heel. If you get very emotional over losses, then keep your losses small. I mean, we could go to a training course and learn to have you learn to not get emotional, but it's much easier to just not go there, just to not let the thing happen and manage the position. There's so many stocks. There's more stocks than anything else. There's thousands and thousands of them. You can go around and find yourself something else that's reasonable to get into. And we'd like to trade medium price to high price because the movements are bigger and the option premium is bigger. But you can start smaller with this. We've talked about this a number of times on the program. And I like it as a backdrop because every day when I come into the office, I can say to myself, I've got options on. So I don't, you know, I'm not feeling like I've got nothing going and I have to get into the market. Those options are working in the background. It's a slow boat, but over time, it does pay off. It just pays off differently than futures trading does. Get a book. And by the way, I've said this before, and then we'll move on. Lawrence McMillan wrote a book that became the Bible for options investing called Options as a Strategic Investment. And you may have to get, like me, some dental work done just in order to pronounce that title correctly. But it's the Bible of all the different kinds of options positions, and it's an explanation. It's a medium-level book. It's not a big book for beginners. But he does teach you, or he does explain how it works. It's just it took me some time to really get it down. I mean, I may not be the, I don't know, you know, the sharpest, you know, knife in the drawer or whatever, but it took me some time to get what options were really doing, and I started with his book. I think there are easier books than that, but I think everybody should have Lawrence McMillan's book, Options as a Strategic Investment. He's a really sharp guy. He has his own website. I'm not sure what it's called, but if you Google Lawrence McMillan, I've had lunch with him. I've met him several times. He's actually been a customer of ours. We have no financial arrangement with him, but he is a sharp guy when it comes to options, so you might want to contact him through his website and, you know, do some, you know, maybe he can help you out with options as well. So he's not a broker. He's a guy that does work with options and tells you what he thinks are going to happen in markets and so on. So maybe we can have him on the show sometime.
Because we could certainly invite him.
Yeah, because he's the real deal.
Now, you're in contact really like with him, right?
I'm sorry?
I said you're in contact with him on a...
I haven't spoken to him in a number of years, actually, but I was in contact with him. He was taking some of our soybean roadmaps for a while and some other things, but I was really impressed when I met him out here in Las Vegas. He was at a money show, and we went to lunch, and he's just the real deal. He really knows what he's doing and when it comes to this. So, get his book. You might spend some time with him. And if you do, you can say, you know, David and Dwayne from CFRN, you know, said, you know, go over to see him, and then we'll get $50, you know, for that. So it's pretty nice. No, we don't get anything for it. I'm just tell him. I'm just being silly. No one's laughing, but I thought it was funny. Okay, we'll just move right along.
I think it's a riot. It really
yeah,
is.
Yeah, it really
I'm
is.
I'm laughing. I had the mute on.
Oh, okay. Somebody asked a lot of this stuff.
I didn't want to disturb you.
Oh, we just don't want the microphone to bang around while we're talking. That's
I know.
All.
I know. I'm sorry.
Well, and it's over. It's
again,
over.
I'm sorry. Forgive me.
Okay. No, it's fine. It's nobody's complaining.
I did want to mention that Friday is Coach's Corner.
Okay.
And Coach's Corner is at 3.
Okay.
And we're going to do... What is the dollar threshold that traders can experience and how to manage? So it's all about like kind of money and your beliefs about money. And so it's going to be a very interesting topic. So please join
good.
Us at that time on Friday.
I like that topic.
Yeah, it's
I like
a good
that.
Topic. It's a really good topic. And, you know, check out the website too. If you have anything emotionally going on from in your head, if you are taking a trade or doing any kind of actions that you don't want to do, but you find that your hands are hitting the keyboard unexpectedly or not the way you want to, then you could be dealing with a very strong emotional block. And if you have that, you want to get rid of it. And if you want to check out some things on the website, you can figure out, do you have a block? and you go to the robindane.com site, and there's a whole bunch of free things like an emotional trading test right at the top big red button. And down in the center of the homepage is a lot of free things and presentations and radio show archives. And even though that the radio show archives are long ago, the emotional part of it is still very relevant. So the stuff in the market may not be, but you'll see an interesting comparison. But the emotional stuff is very, very, very relevant. And I used to interview the top traders around the country, and so there's some really interesting interviews. Prechter I did once, and I did one of the guys from Market Wizards a couple times, and Walter Bressert who worked on cycles, and just a whole bunch of interesting people. Bigelow on his candlesticks, and so it was a very good show for interviewing these traders around the country. So you'll get a lot out of it, and it's all free. If you find you can't get through, and you find your emotional trading test has very high numbers, then you want to call me. And I don't have a problem people calling, talking to me, and seeing what the deal is and how they should start. I love talking to traders. I love helping them out. And we can get you going in a direction, or we can wait, or we can at least just give you a place to go if emotionally you've got things going on with your trading. It is the thing between your ears that's going to make the difference. And it is a very high percentage of what you're dealing with in a trade is between your ears. And, you know, like anything else, sports or whatever, it's the same thing. So get control of your mind, get control of your emotions, and that will get control of your trading profitability. So, Dwayne, thank you for having me on today. I don't have a quote today, I don't think. Let me just take it off. I've got a Red Rock kind of an emergency.
Congratulations there. On that too, by the way, your police thing.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that. I'm going to be like an ambassador, so it's kind of interesting. And part of the trauma team, if second layer trauma, if let's say a house burns down, there's the first responders, you know, deal with the people who own the house, but then you've got a second wave of people that come that are like relatives of them. And so we're like the second layer responder, and they put us through training. So it's really, really good. It's really good. I'm real excited about it.
That's great.
Plus, I hope if I get stopped, they'll be a little bit lenient on my ticket. No, I'm not really looking for that, but I have to be very good. I can't really do anything bad now, so I got to be really, really cautious how I go. And we're doing a search actually in the next couple minutes. I got to leave here. Okay. So. Thank you, everybody. But let me give you a quote.
Thanks,
most
Rob.
People live and die with their music still unplayed. They never dare to try. Mary Kay Ash, nothing ventured, nothing gained, that's anonymous. And a ship in the harbor is safe, but it's not it's not what ships are built for. So a ship in the harbor is safe, but it's not what ships are built for. John Shedd. So I will leave you with those. So venture out there, you know, try some new things. Contribute and help somebody today. Do one thing and do when you pass it on?
It's called a solid, doing a solid. Oh, I think you're referring to Pay It Forward.
Pay It Forward, that movie Pay It Forward. What's a great movie, really great movie.
You know, I used to have that little clip from where he does the diagram on the chalkboard. It's about a piece. That was a great clip. I'd like to find that again.
Great movie. Play It Forward if you haven't seen it. It takes place in Vegas, even better. And it's just a really heartfelt movie. Pay It Forward. And really, really, it works. It absolutely works. Absolutely. So pay it forward today somehow. And have a great day, everybody. Thank you, Dwayne, for having me. David, as always, a pleasure.
Always
Michael,
a pleasure.
Michael and Bert, you guys are just awesome. And if you're going to take that trial, make sure you take the trial for the whole 5 days. Do not take the trial and then go for 1 day. Take the trial and go for the whole 5 days so you can get a good evaluation of it. And, you know, I remember Michael saying, you know, if you try to up it again to get a second trial, you're going to get booted out because they have the system set up that way. Just call Michael. You know, call Michael, have a conversation with him or Dwayne, and express your needs or what your desire is. And they're pretty accommodating. Not that you're going to do this as a regular thing, but, you know, if you really are interested and you really need the time in there and something happened that you just couldn't make it, then they're pretty flexible when it comes to that. But you got to do it through them and talk to them. You can't just do it on your own because the system will just boot you out.
Yeah, and it establishes a line of communication. And
exactly.
It, you know, of course, shows a little integrity, which is always appreciated. And
yeah.
So, yeah, if you're serious about the free trial, and you know what, guys, every day some comes through where for the name on the free trial, people type in gibberish. And I'm sure with David's free trial, he probably experiences the same thing.
We get it all the time.
Bogus phone numbers, you know. I Google the numbers. I look at the name. And if your application to take the free – now, see, we're willing to give you our time, our resources. You know, don't be misled by the fact that it says free trial. There's nothing free, okay? We're expending resources, both financial and time, to try to help you. So if you're not serious, then don't waste your time. I guess it's probably the best thing to say, rather than try to sound pompous and say don't waste my time. Don't waste your own time. You know, wait until a point in your life where you actually are ready, and then it'll be a meaningful experience. Whether you become a partner or not is not even the point. The point is that if you do show up for 5 days and, you know, roll up your sleeves and get busy and pay attention, whether you become a partner or not, you will, after 5 days, you will have gained some very valuable experience and some very valuable trading truths. Not smoke, but truths that you'll carry with you throughout the rest of your life, all your days, whether you're a trader or not. You'll have knowledge. You know, once you gain knowledge, no one can take that from you. So, and we'd love to have you come, okay? So, but thanks for saying that, Robin. I appreciate it. As always, we appreciate you. Good luck today. Congratulations on your new venture. You're always, you wake up every day and the first thought on your mind, I'm just believing, is not what can I get today, but that your first thought is more along the lines of what can I give today. And I would encourage everyone, it's a wonderful way to start every day.
There you are.
What can
Thank
I
you, give? Robin.
Take care, Rob.
I think she's already gone.
Bye. All right. Well, tell her when she comes back I said good stuff about her. Okay.
Right.
There was a couple more questions, David, about the – let me scroll up.
You know, I was going to throw something in if you just would give me 30 seconds here, just something
ahead.
That she said that triggered. You know, if you're going through a relationship problem where you have a girlfriend and you guys are having a tough time together, it might not be a good time for you to trade, because one of the things that does ultimately reveal what your actual beliefs are about yourself are these types of problems, emotional things that occur. And you might feel very down, you might feel very worthless, or whatever these feelings are, that feeling becomes exposed, your real belief about yourself, or maybe you believe that other people are always wrong and you're always right. Whatever it is, those beliefs get exposed, and they're raw. They're right out in front of you. That's a good way to know what you really believe, number one. But number two, when that happens, that exposure upsets your equilibrium, and it's probably not a good idea to be trading through emotional issues like that. Maybe it takes a week or more sometimes for you to get away from it. Something big happens. I went through this last, in 2011 with my mother because, she passed away, and I was very, very raw and emotional about that, and I knew that it would be very difficult to put a good trade together because everything was exposed, So if you go through something like that, and even if it's on just a local, doesn't have to be something as big as that, but, relationships with people, business things, something really flips your switch hard and exposes some of these actual beliefs that you have. those beliefs, you know, like, oh, I'm just a loser. You know, I lost my girlfriend. Now I'm going to lose this trade. Now I'm going to do this. Those kinds of repeating thoughts come in. You will not do well in trading under those conditions. You have to be relaxed and pretty much light-spirited or at least relaxed. Maybe you don't need to be light-spirited, but to really kind of make this work for you consistently. So don't be afraid to just say, you know what, I need to take a walk, or I need to not do this for a few days. It's good. And I know a trader personally that who I respect, because I've heard him do that on a number of occasions, say, no, I'm just taking a break. I don't get what's happening here, or something happened in his life, and he just knows when to take a break. That can save you an enormous amount of money. So just keep that in mind, that trading is fun, and it's all these things, but if you're emotionally, the apple cart's been thrown by some event, something that really has exposed something to yourself, it makes it very difficult to be good at the markets for a short period of time. Probably a good idea not to trade, and don't be afraid not to do it. Go ahead, Dwayne.
Now I forget what it was. Was I going to ask you a question? Is that what it was?
What were you doing just before that? Okay.
Well, let me just go back to the questions, and if it was something otherwise, I will. Okay, we covered the comment. You can also sell spreads to minimize the margin. You already addressed that. The next one was, if I sell naked put, does it go to the last day? You already answered that. And then Jerry threw in, no, a spread is a buy and sell calls or puts. I guess that's a comment, not a question.
Okay.
And then Jerry says, not a straddle or strangle. They are.
Right. And these are other option strategies. Straddles and strangles are other.
This is a whole language, guys, that I admit I am not familiar with.
Well, and you can get all these things through that book that I told you about.
Yeah. It's something I could certainly learn. Now,
anybody can.
Pete says, is a spread option similar to a binary trade?
The binary trade thing is more a European thing than it is out here, although I think we do have some of it here. Bert would know.
We have a new
but
exchange
there isn't,
called...
There isn't a... I'm sorry?
We have a new exchange here in the U.S. called Nadex.
Yep. Yeah. Yes. But no, it isn't necessarily the same. And there's no such thing as a spread option. What it is you put on an option spread. So you're actually utilizing options from either the same month or different month, same strike price, different strike price. All these variables make up for these different names that Dwayne just went through. You know, strangles and calendars and condors and all these different names that are in option strategy. And again, what they're trying to do is they're trying to minimize the risk, sort of hedging with options one way or the other, and still leaving a profit left over. And it gets a little complicated. It's not something you should be afraid of, but it gets complicated because there's all these different strike prices and all these different months that you can select from to put these options on, and you can put more than two. You don't just have to do a simple spread. You can do all kinds of other deeper and more involved things. But I've said this before, it doesn't matter how complicated it is, you have to be right about whatever the overall option position is ultimately saying. If you put on a multi-month calendar spread condor that's really acts like a strangle, okay, that's fine. You can go ahead and do that. But if the net of all of those options means that the market has to remain below this level and above that level for this period of time, then that's what you have to be right about in order to make money. What I'm really saying is there is no free lunch by somehow magically manipulating options so that no matter what the market does under any conditions for all times and places, you make money. You still have to make a bet. And all of these options, positions, straddles, strangles, and whatnot, are you placing a bet that a certain event will or will not happen, or will happen under these conditions, or will not happen under these conditions? You're still placing a bet. So one of the reasons I'm saying that is because early on, I actually thought that you could set up some really super, super clever, not thought of yet thing with enough options and enough ways to spread them all over that it actually would make you money and it would guarantee it. And nothing at all like that exists because you're still placing a bet. The net of all those options, no matter how complicated you lay the position out, is still a bet. it still means the market must do this or must not do that under these conditions through this time frame to that time frame, through this calendar set of months or whatever, and you have to be right. So the options don't erase the fact that you have to be right about your bet, but what options do give you is a very, very large and interesting way, a wide variety of bets, you know, I hate to even use that word, but just for the sake of the discussion, of bets that you can make. You can do, you can place bets of all different kinds, like with, if you buy a futures contract, you're basically saying, I think the market's going to go up. But you can put options on that says, well, I actually think the market is going to go up, but it's going to only go up this far, and then it's going to come down, and it's going to stay within this range for the next 2.5 months. You can actually place that specific bet, that very thing I just said, as a bet, utilizing options, that that's what you think is going to happen. So options allow you to express your more nuanced opinion about what the market's going to do, where futures only allows you to say the market's going to go up or the market's going to go down. And so people like options because they allow this much broader, much more nuanced kind of bet, but you still have to be right about that bet. So there is no bet with options that somehow makes you money without you being right. No matter how complicated it is, it's still a bet, and you have to be right about it. So just keep that in mind. Don't chase the rabbit hole of thinking that there's some magical thing. You are placing a bet with options, but you have a wider variety of bets, the kind of bet that you're betting on, the kind of events that you think the market's going to do. And there are many, many different kinds. Believe me, it goes, you know, it's not just a few of them. There's hundreds of different kinds of expectations you might have for the market that you could adequately express in the use of options. So they're really an interesting thing, and I encourage people to learn about them, and don't be afraid of the apparent complexity up front. Once you get some basics down, it becomes much, much clearer. Even a book like Options for Dummies, or which I actually should have read first because I did struggle with Lawrence McMillan's book. Even though I loved it, it was a struggle for me. So then after a while, you start understanding what's going on. So I hope that's helpful. And Dwayne, I think unless...
There's another question here, if you got a minute.
Okay. Sure.
If the option is in the money by a nickel at expiration, it will be exercised. This is from Kevin, who he knows a thing or two about a thing or two.
It will be exercised, and because it's in the money, and it'll be exercised, and you will owe that amount that it's in the money. In other words, if you sold a put believing the S&P was going to go up, the S&P doesn't get exercised. The S&P gets settled in cash. So if you sold an S&P put and the market went down and threw your put strike price, the price that the put was sold at, and the market expired 3 points below, then you are going, it's going to be settled in cash. In other words, you will owe those 3 points. You basically lost those 3 points on the trade. So in stocks and other things, they get settled differently. The S&P gets settled in cash, and you can be put the stock and all that. But what an option writer, you know, typically you hear this a lot. It's the professionals that are the option writers. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it really is just professionals. It tends to be people that have larger trading accounts. That doesn't necessarily mean they're professionals. But because they have more money, they have the margin requirement to do multiple options. And so a lot of times they just say if a person has more money in his account, he tends to be sort of a professional. But there's a lot of really dumb trading going on with options, just like there is in other things. And being dumb doesn't, I don't mean that even derogatorily. I mean dumb. I mean people just doing silly, stupid things with their money instead of learning to trade properly and learning to be make a series of right decisions in the market. And those right decisions include getting out when you're wrong. They include holding positions for profit targets and so on. But there's no point in trying being right just once. If you're going to be trading, you're going to have to be right a whole bunch. And you have to be right by getting out when you're wrong. That's also a right decision, right? You know, is to get out when you're wrong and not let the thing go and not hope. Because the one time you do that and it comes back, that teaches you a very powerful lesson that that's all you need to do, and everybody's going to follow that. I went down that rabbit hole for years. I was sucked into that thing for years, holding for the break even. I have enough margin so that it'll come back. The market's not, you know, and on and on and on. It's just please save yourself the trouble and learn to trade correctly using risk management and all the things that are talked about on the program by both Dwayne and myself, and be reasonable in your both in your expectations and in your abilities. You're not if what that means is it's like a guy going into the gym. He can't lift 100 pounds, but he might be able to lift 35 pounds. Well, do what you're capable of doing, and that will improve what you're doing. Don't try to jump up and trade, you know, 200 contracts all at once to see if you can just be lucky and be able to tell your friends and all these things that people go through. Manage this like it's an investment. And every day is a new day, and think of the month. Don't think of the day so much. I mean, this may go counter to some other things on the program, but in general, if you think a little longer term, not necessarily just with the trade, but just say, look, what I'm trying to do at the end of the month is have a few thousand dollars extra. Let's just say that's just what you're trying to do. That means that you're going to do your very best every day, but if something doesn't work out on a particular day, it's not the end, because you have the whole month to try to make those several thousand or whatever the thing is for you, whatever the goal is that you're trying to do. My goal isn't monetary. My goal is probability. I'm looking for high probabilities. That's the goal. If I can find the high probability trade, the monetary side of this thing takes care of itself. So I lean towards that. We all have different opinions on how it works. I don't like to think in terms of money and monetary. It triggers too many things in me. There's too many built-in things. Rather than go in and try to ferret them all out, I just don't trigger it. I just don't think in terms of money. I think in terms of probabilities. And then the money ends up taking care of itself. And I do think longer term, so that I say, hey, if I didn't do anything today, I've got the whole month to get to whatever number it is, and if the probabilities are there, I'll show you a good number at the end of the month. If not, and sometimes you have a bad month, sometimes that happens. So, but what you don't want is a wipeout month. You don't want the month that they just took it all from you. And I have old trading statements, and I wouldn't mind posting one of them on here if you want to see some really ugly trading where you make big money and you lose big money and you make big money and you lose big money and you think, what is this guy? What is this, a zoo animal doing this? Who's doing this? You know, and it's me. Your humble correspondent. That was how I traded, and that just it gets you nowhere. So, anyway, I hope that's helpful to people, because one of the things that is the most beneficial things is to have people just tell you how it is, and you may have to learn that for yourself. You may not believe them. You may have to see for yourself that that's the case, but at least you did hear it, and maybe that helps you get through the phase faster where you're doing all the wrong stuff, because people do seem to have to go through a phase in learning this of getting the wrong stuff out of their system. And some of us take longer than others, and some of us learn quicker. And the ones that learn quicker, you know, get down the road to successful trading quicker. So there you are.
Okay, there's a question about, in answer to your question, Mario, I typed it in, but to make sure you get it. Yeah, the name of the book that David recommended was Options as a Strategic Investment by Lawrence G. McMillan. I will track him down and send him out an invitation to come and join us here on the show, just as Burton McKeel, Random Walk Down Wall Street.
Tell him that, if you don't mind, Dan, tell him that I brought him up, because I'm sure he'll be glad to hear that, because I really like the guy.
Sure. Let him know that we've had a radio relationship here for a number of years, and that you've brought him up on a number of occasions, and we'd very much like to discuss his thoughts on current market conditions and all that kind
Great.
Of stuff.
Great. That'd be a lot of fun.
Oil just tanked, according to Jerry, or is tanking. Any thoughts? This is an oil
tanking.
Chart.
I like that term.
Yeah, right.
let me bring it up real quick, and then I do have to run, but let's take a look.
No
and thank you for mentioning that, because we are all interested in this very thing that may be occurring in the crude oil market.
An hourly chart.
Okay, the 96.04 level that we talked about earlier, Dwayne, or everybody, that is the level that we want to see the market close below this week, and then that's going to be very important for us. I believe it will close, as I talked about earlier this week. I believe it will close below 96.04 this week, and I believe it will confirm, therefore, what we're looking for. So thank you for letting us know that it's tanking. I love those kinds of phrases too, because those are the best. You know, we should write a list of all the greatest trading phrases. You know, the numbers just get thrown out. Oil's tanking. You know, I like that. So
are they
that's
really
good that oil's tanking? They're down $1.45
traders today. Traders really put the squeeze on orange juice today. There's one.
There's one.
Off the top of my head.
I used to trade crude, but I didn't like having to get up so oily in the morning. Little humor there.
Yeah.
Don't get me started. I used to work at a transmission factory, but I didn't like the shift I was on. All right, I'll stop.
Hey, just in case you were wondering, the most dangerous jobs in the world are fishermen. This is per 100,000 workers. 121 fishermen die on the job per 100,000. Loggers, 102, hence the reality shows we're seeing. Pilots, 57. And by the way, these pilots are in like prop planes, crop dusters, farmers and ranchers, police officers, construction workers. The national average is 3.5. What I found very interesting is that firefighters are actually below the national average. And that's probably due to the fact that they are trained to take, you know, additional safety precautions. With a police officer, you're stepping in front of, you know, some madman with a gun. You can't really control that.
Sometimes when I'm in front of a police officer, I think I'm in front of a madman with a gun.
Yeah,
so
well,
I just got to let you know.
This could be, yeah. And then business and finance, surprisingly, we're the ones known to jump out windows. We're at the bottom of the list.
That's right. Even though we jump out windows, we learn to manage the risk side, so there's no need to even, you know, get near the window.
And of the financial or the market wizards, most of those died on the way to work from transportation accidents.
Transportation accidents. Well, what's that program? There's 1,000 ways to die. You know,
yeah.
All the different ways for people to die. We cover a lot of ground on this program. Well, Dwayne, listen, I think that's everything I have. Thanks for pointing out on crude, if that was Jerry or who that was.
Jerry,
I'm glad to see that. That helps everybody right now. So we're seeing what we want to see in this. And we'll talk a little bit about more tomorrow. And, Dwayne, as always, thank you for
having
me on.
Donald, I got to give you airtime for this because you've said it 2 days in a row, I think. The early bird gets the worm, but the second mouse gets the cheese.
Okay.
Do you get it?
I'm not sure. I may have to. I'm not that good on my feet.
The second mouse gets the cheese. The first mouse gets killed.
Oh, got it. Okay. I got it.
Oh, and please, Bruce says, please address natural gas.
Oh, he means right now. Okay, let's take one last quick look. And then I really do have to go.
Like he might. Yeah, I know you do.
And I know you do, too. I'm trying to be conscious of
everyone's
time.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up, David. I won't be here tomorrow.
Do you want to handle, or do you, have no show?
No. Michael's aware of it, and the show will go on as scheduled, as planned. I tried every 9 ways to Sunday to change things, but I can't.
When Dwayne Reeves isn't on the radio, then I think Dwayne Reeves needs to say why that might be, even though you don't really have to.
I have to take my wife to the doctor, and because it has to do with her vision, she won't be able to drive after the appointment, and unfortunately, I begged them to change
the date, yeah, and it's really hard to get an appointment with any doctor nowadays, I know. So
that's the deal.
Okay, real quick on natural gas, I don't have a lot, but one of the things that we had talked about to our guys, the institutional people, the 36, 45 to 50 level, which they did reach, and there was a reflected wave daily top, we looked for the multi-day reaction on the downside. We're still thinking in those terms. One of the reasons this is an important turn to us is because there still is a possibility, although I'm starting to think not, but there still is a possibility that the market will go down in February and touch $2.98. I want to say to you, though, that if they close above the $3.48 level, it's likely that won't happen. But here's the thing. They just put in a daily top. This would be the time, if a person wanted to, take advantage of the idea that they may still do the 298 in February. So, you know, maybe actually, you know, I'm not, I really can't give individual advice out, but to make this clearer so that somebody could really understand it, there's nothing wrong with you asking by calling us and asking for me. I would be very happy. I like to do most of it on the program, but there is a complexity to this particular setup that rather than go through it verbally, you know, I could go with you over the phone verbally and maybe make it a little bit clearer. If you want to, you're more than welcome to call, and I'd be very happy to help you with it. But what we said yesterday about it and the day before or whatever about the multi-day top, that's what our belief is here, that they hit an important level on the upside. I think it's in the March contract that we're talking. But don't be afraid to give me a call. I'll be very happy to talk about it, and you know, we could see sharply, we could still see much lower prices here. So I hope that's helpful. Dwayne, as always, thank you for having me on the program. I'll plan on seeing you. I won't see you tomorrow, but I'll be on. And however, if there's any changes or you want me to do anything differently or shorter or whatever, just let me know.
Okay. Yeah, as far as I know, it'll go just, you know, you and Michael, and he'll hang out as long as he can.
It'll be great. I get it. You know, Michael, you know how I like to make fun of him. I mean, it's just poke fun at
him. Well, I won't be able to talk. I might have my earbuds in, and I might dial in, or I might fire up one of my iPhone apps and just listen in.
All right.
Be able to talk. So,
okay, he's kind of the Spock of our whole group.
He is
Michael Borg. Yeah.
We all gotta
play with that.
So, all right, David. I know you got to go. Thanks so much.
I do. Thank you very much for having me on, Dwayne. And I'll talk with all of you tomorrow. Hope that was helpful. Thank you for the questions as well.
Have a great afternoon.
Bye bye.
Guys, that's going to do it for us, too. We're back to the S&P 500 E-mini futures chart, okay, hourly candles. Now, I want you to notice that every one of these hourly candles from 2,200 hours last night, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. 16 hours. Every one of these candles, hourly candles, has either been inside of and or touching this weekly zone at 87.88. Now, this isn't a pitch about how great the zones are. It's a different pitch. It's a pitch about just explaining to you consolidation in the market. Okay? Now, we have sort of a unique perspective in that we're looking at this 87.88, and we can see how price, you know, got above it, came back to it, got below it, back to it, above it, back to it, and then in the same hour, below it and above it. So in other words, this is kind of the center of gravity here. See what I'm saying? It price oscillates below and then above and then below and then above and then below and then above. Okay. It will keep doing that until when? Until it stops. That's right. Now, after all those hours that I counted off, this is the first hour since this hourly candle back here. This is the first hourly candle that actually stands a chance of breaking free of this magnetic pull, if you will, that the zone has created. And see right there, there's a little bit of space between the bottom of that hourly candle and the zone. Now, is that big a deal? Not really. But let me go back over here and say this. On this candle here, this hourly candle, it just kind of whooshed right up through there, okay? Now, you've heard me say this before. I'll say it again. Repetition is important because the more times you hear something, the more times you start to really take a look at it and embrace it, and then you start to vet it to see if it's really true. See, just because somebody says it on the radio or on TV or in a seminar or in a meeting or whatever, that doesn't make it true. Even if it's somebody that you trust with your life, just because they say it doesn't mean it's true. Okay? Now, there are personal truths and there are truth truths. You'll have to do a little thinking to sort out the difference. But that person who you have so much respect for, you hang on their every word, you love them, you just have a just deep relationship with them. They may be saying something that they, with all of their heart, believe is true. However, it might not be. Because where did they get that truth? And what have they done, if anything, to vet the truthfulness of that truth? Or did they just accept it? Oh, well, he said it, so it must be true. Well, unfortunately, now, this is not to in any way diminish that individual who you might be taking that advice from. Not at all. Because in good faith, he took that from someone that he had a lot of trust in. I mean, this truth, in quotes, may have been passed down for generations, and nobody has stopped to vet it, to see if it really is the truth, or if it has just become a saying. Okay? So, I'm always encouraging you with anything that we talk about on this show, anything that we show you here, anything that you learn in a partner's meeting or in becoming a partner or during the live trading room, vet it, vet it, vet it, okay? Just because we say it, just because we believe it, it's not going to have the impact on your life and your trading that we want it to have until you take the time to vet it yourself and make it your own. When somebody says, well, why do you believe that? Do you have an answer? If your answer is because so-and-so said so, well, it's an acceptable answer, but you can take it to the next level. Okay? You can take it to the next level. Now, you've heard me say again and again that when price blows up like this in one candle through a weekly trading zone, that the chance of it coming back to that zone for some consolidation, some coiling, a couple different terms you can apply, we expect that. Okay? Now, I'm telling you, there's no law carved in stone anywhere that says it has to do that. It's just something that I have seen play out over and over and over and over and over. If it ever stopped doing that, I'll probably be the first person to notice it because it's something that I watch. So as price broke here and got, see this one candle right here closed above this weekly trading zone without touching. We moved up through it in one candle, and then we had one candle that opened and closed without touching the weekly zone. At that point, I then know, and I say know because I truly believe that I know this, price now must do one of two things. It must continue on its upward trajectory to the final weekly trading zone, or it needs to come back to 1487/48 and consolidate for a period of time before it makes the run. We went up through it. Now, see, we didn't have a weekly trading zone here. This was the highest high in the last 5 years. The S&P 500 E-mini futures right there. See, we can scan back If you keep going back for 5 years, you won't find. You have to go back 5 years to find that high. Okay. So that in and of itself is important. Now, could we do a couple things to try to figure out why that number came into play? Yeah, we could. You know what? Maybe I'll put a little something together tomorrow and show you. Okay? I don't want to complicate this simple point, which I know I've talked about it so much now, there's no way it could be simple, but price blew up through the zone, so we look for it to come back and consolidate before it moves on. Well, it broke, came back, consolidated. The only thing left now is for it to make the move to the next zone. Okay, what gets in the way of it making it to the next zone? Well, the first thing that comes to mind would be that high right there. Okay. For whatever reason, yesterday, people were very happy. Look at this. Buyers were very happy hour after hour to bid the market up, bid it up, bid it up, bid it up, bid it up, and suddenly it stopped. Okay? Now, Jerry asks, is simple an automatic software generated by sell signal? Yes, Jerry, it is. Okay, let's go over here and let's take this swing low right here. We don't do fibs a lot here, but occasionally, because I know a lot of you have interest in them, and I spent several years pursuing fibs as a standalone strategy. I became convinced over time that while they were it was a great confirmation tool, and frankly, very amazing, it didn't serve me well as a standalone strategy, and I've yet to meet anyone who uses that methodology in a purely standalone manner. I know a lot of people who have attempted to, but ultimately they always end up leaning towards something else, some other thing that gives them a confluence, some confirmation, and that's how I recommend that you use it, especially for those of you who I know invested a lot of time and a lot of money in learning about Fibonacci and the golden ratio and the spiral and the whole thing. I'm not saying you should discount that. I'm not saying you wasted time or money. No, you gained very valuable education. Okay. Now all you need to do is bring something else alongside of it so that you can truly benefit from all that time and energy and money that you might have spent into learning fibs. Okay. Trust me, you did not waste your time. And that's the last thing in the world I want you to take away from this particular conversation. So, with that said, if we're going to measure this, we have to go to the swing low. And let me just do that again. Because some of you are, on the other hand, I know that some of you are relatively new and you're not familiar yet with fibs. You've not spent that time and that energy. Okay? So this is just a real quick. On the DT Pro, you come here, hover over this. It says Fibonacci retracements. Just left click it. Okay, go to this swing low right here. Drag it up to that swing high. Okay, now we couldn't drag it to the swing high until the swing high was in place. All right, now that we have done that, we have a swing low and a swing high. There are a number of different Fibonacci levels. The first one, I typically don't look at. Some people do. The person I learned from, they discounted it, and that just kind of carried over with me. Okay. And from my own study of the charts and markets for a number of years, I really think that if I'm pulling fibs or drawing fibs to look for a bigger type move, I want to see at least a 38% retracement. Maybe we'll get that other smaller one in there, but I really want to see the 38. So, okay. Where's the 38? Now, it just so happens, all right? Look at that. Our tweet last night was 1485. The low of this candle is 85 and a quarter, and then the low of the next candle is 1485. Exactly. Now the actual Fib was 1485.20. Okay, so remember this. It's just like with weekly trading zones. Fibs are an area. And so when I say an area, what do I mean by that? Well, let's draw a little box from the 38 down to the 62. Okay. So on this, off of this move, price could have pulled back anywhere inside of this box, and that would simply be a pullback in an uptrend. Once it goes below the 62% retracement, that's when you start having to ask yourself, maybe this is more than a pullback. Maybe this is a retracement. But here, it came in at the 1485. Now, you may be asking, well, is that how you arrived at that number for the tweet? Did you pull up the fibs? And believe me or not, it's up to you. I'm not. Some of you know me, so you know I'm just going to be honest with you, and others don't know me yet, and so you may, you are right to be suspicious. It's not that big a deal anyway, but you may not always like what I tell you, but I'll always tell you the truth. And I guess you have to believe that or else it doesn't matter. But I was using the CFRN indicators, and all this was a pullback to the BBC. On the hourly chart, nothing fancier than that. There was a bullish cross on the hourly. There was a pullback to the... That thing that Michael shows you every morning, trade after trade after setup, he's doing it on the four-tick range, okay? When I do tweets at night, I'm usually looking at either the hourly or the four-hour, something in between or something a little bigger. On the overnight, when you see me tweet something overnight, it's going to be the rare occasion that I'm looking at anything smaller than hourly. And part of the reason is when we looked at that five-minute chart, you saw that the market just went flat for a very long period of time, leading into the Asian Open. Then it got a little move going. Then it was very quiet into the European Open. And so trading on something smaller than an hourly... It can be frustrating. I mean, you can't sit there and stare at that chart. You've got to set up some kind of an alert. You want your computer to tell you when you get to an important price level, whatever the case may be. Or you can do as I did, and using the CFRN indicators, I threw up my hourly chart. I put the MA1 and the BBC on, okay? And it clearly said, just as you see with Michael in the morning on the four-tick range, it said, if price pulls back to 1485, that's the spot to get long. So, it did. Now, important prices are almost always tested. How many times have you heard me say that? A lot. Okay, so it came down to 1485. All right. Right here. It bounced up to 1489. So that was a four-point move. It then came back to do what? Test that important area, 1485. And now it's bounced up to 9050. So on the second go-around, it's been a five-and-a-half-point move. Okay. Now, let's take this trend line. Let's copy it, paste it. Okay, I didn't get something right. Let's try it again. Control C. Control V. There we go. Now I have an identical parallel trend line. Now, it's the best I can do with that. Any break of this trend line, just like yesterday, okay, this is a parallel line. All right, has it been tested and all that? No, it hasn't. I'm just dragging over a parallel line. You know, I could have put this parallel line anywhere along here. Would it have been meaningful? Well, right there it would have been. My point is just to give you a visual cue here, something to watch for if the market is going to retrace its steps. Let's see how close we can get it. Yeah, it's pretty close. Okay. And that's all that is. That's nothing more. Okay. Just simply shows you the price going the other way. But watch for a pattern like this. Okay. Big body, big candle. Okay. All of these, big candle, big candle, big candle, big candle, big candle, and I'm including the wick, big candle. And this one, this had a full head of steam. How do I know that? Because that candle doesn't have a wick on the top. So in other words, it didn't run up and then retrace. This candle closed on the high for that hour. Okay, that's bullish. Okay, the next candle does something a little unusual. It creates a smaller candle than all of these preceding candles. Okay. Even going back to this one with the tail, and see, big candle, big. This one was medium-sized, big, big, big. Big in context based on what else you see on the chart. Then you get a small candle. Now, here's the game changer. You get a bearish candle that, after the small candle, you get a bearish candle that closes below the low of that previous candle, which, as we can now see after the fact, marked the top. But over here, you can begin to prepare to watch for something similar, okay? This thing may march right on up to our next weekly trading zone. It may not. It may pause. It may want to take a rest. The markets could get quiet. But a good visual indicator will be just like the one we had yesterday when we tracked these bottoms here. See how that close was just a tad below there. Then we get two very small candles, spinning tops. And then we get the drop into 85. So this 85, now, when I said that Fibonacci makes a great confirmation tool, I had my CFRN indicator telling me to buy a pullback to 1485 on a limit. I didn't even bother to do the fibs last night. I just accepted it at face value. But today, pulling these fibs to show you, to give you the example, I could say much to my amazement, but really I'm not amazed, because this plays out again and again because it's math. And one thing about math, it never changes, right? At least as far as I know, it doesn't. I mean, they make new discoveries from time to time, but pretty much math is math. They've come up with new ways of teaching it, because when my kids come home from school with their homework, half the time I have to Google to figure out how to help them with fifth grade homework. Not because I don't understand the math, I don't understand the method they're using today to teach the math, but the math itself, it's the same. So 38% retracement from 85, ultimately we run up to 89. We come back, we test that important area at 85. We put in another run, we've gotten up now to 90.5, okay? Once we get here, we've got a double top, okay? We are, what are we, a point and a half? Let's see, this high is 1491.5, and we're at 1490.5. So one more point, we'll have a double top. We'll want to watch at that double top to see if price gets rejected. Okay, let's say price does go here, put in a double top, Then we get a close below this trend line here. Okay? Now remember, this line is not about connecting bottoms. This line is simply a parallel of this line. So there is a difference. But let's say we get to the double top and we get a close below. That should be a heads up to maybe not necessarily get into a short position, but if you're long, consider taking profits. Okay? Now let me go to the question box and see. I covered a lot of stuff there. Let me see if I, if anybody had a question about that. Okay. Usually the weekly trading zones are farther apart. These two zones are so close. Is there a reason for this? There are no zones all the way to 96. So if market goes up, what target do you look for? Now when you say there's no zone, there are no zones all the way to 96. I don't have a zone this week, Tim, at 96. I don't know if you're looking at a previous week or something. We do have another weekly zone overhead, and the partners got that in their email prior to the market opening on Tuesday morning. The reason the zones are, and you're absolutely correct, from top to bottom, the lowest weekly zone to the highest weekly zone this week is less than 50 points. In fact, it's like 43. And that has to do, I'll tell you exactly what that has to do with. Let's see, today is Wednesday, Tuesday, Monday. So from this high on Friday, Thursday, Wednesday, Tuesday, Monday, look at that small range that we were in. Okay? Let's see. Today's Wednesday, Tuesday, Monday. So that would be Friday. Okay. Friday, Thursday, Wednesday, Tuesday, Monday. But you get my point. Okay. We had a very tight range last week. And so that predicates the zones for the following week. If we have, you know, big volatility and big moves, then the zones are going to be farther apart. On average, just to give you an idea, on average, from the lowest weekly zone to the highest weekly zone, the average is about 100 points. I've seen it go as high as 150. I think that's the largest. But I've seen it go really small, and this would be one of the smaller weeks. Okay, I don't know if I've ever seen it go below 40. But, yeah, between 40 and 50, that's tight. And I know there have been a number of weeks in the past. Not in the recent past. Well, there's been a couple. But, yeah. So, good observation. And that's why. And there's nothing I can do to change that. That's because it's based on the structure of the market itself. Okay? The market dictates where these zones are going to be. And I have to work with that. Sometimes the zones are so close together, I feel almost it's like, gosh, there's no point of even putting this out. They're so close together. But then, here, let me get rid of the fib stuff so it's a little easier to see. I mean, this zone is from 84 to 87. That's 3 points. But the market made the trip and then came back to test. And then spent all this time consolidating, came back to test, you know, again. And now it's making this move to try to put in this double top. If we go back over here, this zone from 83 to 78, that's only 5 points. Like, wow. But it is what it is. So that's the reason. Now, so if the market goes up, what target will I look for? I'll look for the next weekly trading zone. Okay, that's where my sights are. If we take out this double top right here, and because I believe that to be an important area, why? Because it's the highest high in 5 years. Here's what I would look for. If we do take that out, we get above that, I'm going to watch for price to come back and test that area, okay? Especially if it just blows through it. Then I'm really going to wait to see it come back. And then if it comes back to test that area and starts to firm up, okay? In other words, the bodies of the candles start to get small, we start to move sideways, I'll then look for a continuation of the move up to our next weekly zone. And Jeanette says, and no law that price will retrace three times, as I mentioned last week. Yeah, Jeanette, not that I know of. I mean, price can retrace once, twice, three times. It's always going to retrace eventually, depending upon what time frame you're looking at. If you get into, you know, in smaller time frames, like let's say a 1 minute, you'll see, you know, a lot of retracements that, for instance, in this hourly candle right here, this represents 1 hour of market activity. Price
rate. Hey,
yes.
Excuse me. We have a meeting right now. Just wondering.
Oh, does it start at 3?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it started at 3:30. I'm sorry. Okay, guys, I got to run. We got a meeting right now, so let me get out of here.
Sorry, everyone.
Thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a 1 week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decisions.